From the Film Grok Studios in beautiful downtown Studio City, this is Film Grok. Our movie for this week is The Empire Strikes Back. My name is Serge Delpierre, and this week we have
Tim McMillan
and
Duncan K. Fraser
and
Heidi Hilliker.
Our cue point for The Empire Strikes Back is right as Once Upon a Time. Once upon a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. Boy, I'm
Once
totally
Upon
lost.
A Time, but Star Wars.
Once Upon a Time in the West fades up, yes. Oh, is this what we're doing? As One a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away starts fading up, just right before that, pause it there. So you'll have to listen to the 20th Century Fox CinemaScope music by Alfred Newman, and the logo will go away. And
who is the uncle of David, Thomas, and Randy.
Ah, there you go. Oh, the three Newman brothers. Yeah. Okay.
The Newmans.
So, that's where we've paused it, and today our Film Grok projectionist is Otto.
I don't like Otto. I mean...
You know, he's listening to us right now. Oh. And anyway, when it comes to time, we'll tell Otto to... We have a countdown, 3, 2, 1, play. Otto will start the Film Grok projector, and if you want, you can start your DVD player or VCR, and you can listen to us in sync while you're watching the movie, or you can just listen to this while you're... playing lightsabers in the backyard and cutting someone's leg off because you haven't been careful or anything like that. Or playing in your Millennium Falcon replica in your backyard. Now, that would be cool.
That would be
to
really
have
cool
a replica backyard.
People have made those. Mm-hmm. Seriously. So
that's pretty intense.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, I know. I'm like, wow.
I mean, I'll just stick with my micro machines, you know?
Right. They should charge admission.
So while everyone's getting their DVDs or VHSs or betas, as it were, all queued
laser
up.
Laserdisc. Don't leave out Laserdisc.
Well, you know, actually, talk about Laserdisc. The version that, yes, oh, let's make something eminently clear.
And oh, yes,
obviously,
if
you've clicked on this already, you've seen on the website, we are doing the original theatrical version.
Yes.
Which came out, I guess, in 2006 when they put out the special edition on DVD, and then they put out the other disc, which they just basically put on, you know, 4x3 letterbox and a more.
Ugh.
Well, no, yeah, exactly.
Don't get me started.
And that's from the Laserdisc. That was a Laserdisc transfer. And actually, I have the video.
Really?
Well, thank goodness for the Laserdisc, or else we wouldn't even be where we are right now.
Exactly. Sure. I have the VHSs upstairs that were from the Laserdisc also, so they were the widescreen, you know, same type of thing.
So we're doing the pure
version. We are purists here.
Okay.
We don't. Do we recognize it as a special edition?
I don't like any additives.
What was it again?
Do we?
I heard there's somebody added some footage and like made it kind of silly, but I didn't know there was a name for it.
I don't think I've seen Empire in the special editions. I've seen the other two.
It's probably good.
I have seen them all, unfortunately, because I, like Tim, we were talking earlier, I'd seen them in the theater.
Right. I went also
on the relaunch.
Yeah.
So, I'm hearing heavy sighs here.
One of my least favorite things they did was to show the monster in the ice cave.
Yep.
I'm just saying I'm it was agreement. More effective without showing it, you know. Yeah.
So I have an original Empire Strikes Back memory of the original release. Should I share that? Of my first time experience?
And then I will share my experience. Go ahead.
Mine, it happened in Phoenix, Arizona in 1980, and I ditched school to go see it on the day of release. It was during the summer. A summer film, so it was like 118 degrees.
Ugh. Yowza.
And the showings were sold out in advance when we got there, so I had to wait through two showings standing outside before the third screening I was able to attend that day when I wanted to get to the first screening that day.
Wow.
So the line went around Cine Capri, which is the huge flagship theater in Phoenix at that time, and people were dropping like flies from the heat wave and from heat stroke.
Wow.
And the news crews were brought out to cover it as a news event. And they interviewed people around us as people were just fainting right and left, and it became the talk of the town. And I had no water, and I hadn't eaten. This is how diehard it was. And everyone else dropping like flies, and so the line's getting smaller. So we finally get to the third screening, and they bring us in, and a huge lobby, an amazing lobby of just like a showmanship theater, before they open the portals and you're brought into the main theater. It was packed, wall to wall, all people who were like animals by this point in time.
No doubt.
And when the theater doors opened up, I did not walk. I was carried in a mob. My feet were off the ground.
Wow.
And I was carried by the mob into the theater. Excuse me. And my favorite seats in that theater were always the second row center. And I was going to be damned if I would see this film after all that work in any seat other than my favorite. So I paid the people $10 to move. Wow. The apartment, two seats. That's, and then the film started, and after all that horrendous, you know, investment to go through, the sound cut out in the first 5 minutes.
You are kidding me.
The sound cut out, and the theater turned into raging animals.
Yeah.
And they threw
scary, sweaty animals.
All their concessions, all the drinks, all the pop, all the hot dogs were thrown at the glass at the projection booth. People screaming at the top of their lungs.
Man. How long did it take them to fix the sound?
It felt like 3 minutes. It was probably a minute.
Wow.
Wow.
It was quite the elevated energy of that screening. So I'll never forget that.
Can't beat that.
I bet the projectionist has a memory of that day, too.
Right?
It was a mob. It was an ugly mob mentality.
Yikes.
I definitely would not want to be working in a movie theater in any capacity in a situation like that.
Yeah.
Like the poor concession stand people, can you imagine?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they come in.
Well, these people
like zombies, like come in from outside.
They need water.
Like,
they need stuff to drink.
I need water.
So anyway, it was an event.
Popcorn.
I'll always equate this film as an event in my life.
I saw it right around the same time. I saw it May 21st, 1980. I have the ticket. I kept that ticket. So I think that was opening day. I don't remember. I think I saw it twice. Except for some reason, I remember the second time I saw it, not the first time I saw it, because I was so impressed by the first time. I'm like, I have to go back. And literally, I think I went back the next night or the following night. And I remember standing out on Wisconsin Avenue trying to get into KB Cinema again to see it, and did see it because I thought it was so cool. I thought Han Solo was like the shit.
Truth.
It was awesome.
Because kind of is.
Before, in Star Wars, it kind of, but here, but right from the top, he's just like, oh, he's totally got a handle on the whole situation. It was like, oh, this is awesome. It was just fantastic. So I was really happy. It was just like a left turn from Star Wars. You had Star Wars go this way, and then this went this way. Like, never saw that coming. Return of the Jedi, whole different story. It's for another commentary.
We won't go there.
Yeah, that's for
it's
later.
Okay, Serge.
So I had no idea. I'd seen previews of it definitely for the past year or two before. And the interesting thing is, if you ever go back and look at the previews, there was a shot where Luke and Leia kiss. And I'm like, oh, they're kissing. Okay. And you see the movie? They ain't kissing. I mean, it's not the one where she actually kisses them. It's like where they're actually kissing. And that's something they actually wound up cutting out of the film, because obviously that would interfere with what was going to come next.
Right.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this, essentially, in the scene before, in that scene when Han Solo comes in, there was a bit before. That's where that scene actually took place, where they kissed.
Wait, it comes into where?
Well, once Luke's been, you know, in the back teen, whatever.
Oh, yeah, back to tank.
In the back to tank, and then he's out there, and he's, you know, he's talking, and Leia's there, and I think Han is there already. So there was a bit of a scene before that, and that's when Luke and Leia kissed. So
oh,
that got kind of, but that was in the trailer. If you go looking for the old original Empire Strikes Back trailers, you'll see that. Huh. You'll see them kissing.
Well, interesting. I'm going to have to look it up now.
Here? Is that part
No, that's not. I don't know if it's on the disc or not.
No,
you can check.
Sadly,
it.
No.
I think it's on the YouTube.
However, they do have a riveting Lego Star Wars 2 video game Xbox demo and trailer.
You know, you said something, but all I heard was like the peanut sound. Wah, 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 wah. Yeah. So, yeah. So, how about y'all? When
y'all?
When y'all see?
Heidi, you were probably older when you saw this than I was the first time.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm trying to place my exact age. This is, you know, in that zone of time in the 80s where my dad introduced me to like basically like every action or fantasy movie that I love.
Good man. I like him already.
He was a really good man, and he still is. He's not departed. I love you, Dad.
Excellent.
I got to see them in order, which was nice. I do always remember that, because there was a couple of times with, you know, sequel type films that during the 80s, I didn't get to see them in order. Like Back to the Future, I saw it in exact reverse.
Wow. What? How?
Ooh, that's not
Yeah,
good.
It's really confusing, right?
The ultimate like time machine timeline confusion.
Right. It was just so much. But I am somehow a master of the understanding of the time stream continuum, probably because of that accident.
Wow. Oh.
Okay. But, sort of like a superhero side effect.
Yeah, exactly. See? They didn't even know what they were doing. But I did get to see them all. I saw all three together in a row. And
on the same day?
First time seeing them?
It was over a week.
Three?
It was all in this one weekend. Oh, I watched all three.
That is awesome. That
it was really
great.
Awesome.
Your dad is like top of my list.
Yeah, right. It was like the best way to watch the films. I'm really glad that it worked out that way. You know, because it could have like I mean, I could have accidentally seen Return of the Jedi first because all three films came out before I was even born. Sorry.
That would have been a big bummer.
It would have been a really big bummer. But I mean, I just remember watching them all in one weekend. I remember just like loving them and continuing to love these films, you know, as I grew up. In fact, my dad and I went and saw when they were re-released in the theater. We did that together. So that was really fun. And we had to wait for that. We didn't actually even get to go in the first day because we just didn't anticipate how many people were going to be at the theater. But I love them. And definitely this is, to me, the best Star Wars film. I don't hate Return of the Jedi. It's probably my second favorite. And I don't know. I'm just...
Wait, are you...
So
are you
A New Hope? A New Hope would be your third favorite?
Yeah, that'd be my third favorite.
You're hating on Star Wars? Really?
Yeah. I that's the order I like them in.
Wow.
It's all relative.
Yeah. I guess. It's to what you connect to. I mean, sure. I will tell you, most fanboys will probably be on the Sarge side of this debate of Return of the Jedi and whatnot.
I think it makes a difference. Well, at least for me, it made a difference that I saw them in order and several years apart and what part of my life I saw.
Well, and I didn't have to, I didn't have this like insane anticipation built up, which has killed a lot of movies for me in my, you know, you know, older adolescent life and adult life, you know, for sure. The Matrix films being the prime example of that.
Yeah.
Good example.
And so that must have been how that felt. But
well,
I didn't know.
Have 3 years between you.
Exactly.
I mean, I had at most like 12 hours, you know?
There was basically between Empire and Jedi, we had 3 years of like, well, now it's gotten here. Oh, where could it possibly, I mean, the realm of
the
possibilities and the anticipation was so incredibly high, much more than it was. There wasn't a lot of anticipation for Empire Strikes Back, actually. There was there was some.
That day I told you about, that my day of seeing it, it was
I think Jedi way outstripped it in terms of excitement.
Well, because of where
Trilogy.
Empire left it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, because correct me if I'm wrong, but when the first one ended, obviously it doesn't end suggesting there's going to be another film.
It could be a standalone.
Darth Vader has escaped, and it's like, oh, it's a new one.
Yeah, and you were mentioning, Sarge, that there wasn't like talk about making another one and that they sort of marketed poorly. I think you were telling me that.
They were coming out with the book. There was less to anticipate about where it was going and how it was coming out.
It was not a clean slate. Star Wars made
a big splash. I mean, it really revolutionized how you depicted space. And it's just like, it was completely different. Of course you wanted to see the next one. It's like, absolutely.
But it is true that Empire Strikes Back was the cliffhanger.
Oh,
for Jedi, of course.
So that's why, you know, my disappointment with Jedi is a different thing than if you just have no expectations, you just go in, boom, 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 you see them, and then it's fine. So I totally accept that. That was just how I
came to it.
How old were you when you, do you remember, like, you were like 8?
I mean, yeah, I would probably say somewhere between like 6 and 9.
Okay.
You know?
That's interesting.
Definitely had to have been in that zone. But that's when I saw a lot of all those movies that I really love, like Conan and...
Mm-hmm. And you got the Star Wars films?
Oh, yeah. I mean, how can you not get it? It's just like every great epic hero legend. I mean, for sure. And everybody knows this. I mean, they're completely molded off of like Arthurian legend and stuff like that, which I had already been exposed to for some reason, like a lot. And
I think the mythic archetypes are easy to interpret.
Right.
You don't really even necessarily need dialogue.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, you could watch them in a different language even and get it.
Well, how old were you when you first saw... did you see Star Wars and Empire together?
You said May... what was it ticket was?
May 1980. May 21st, 1980 is when it opened.
Okay. A few weeks after that, I turned 4.
Right.
So if my mom took me to see it in the theater when it came out...
You don't remember it.
I don't remember the theater experience, but she took me to see Star Wars when it came out. I'm guessing later because I was 2 when I saw the first Star Wars in the theater.
I think they re-released Star Wars before Empire came out. So you could like see Star Wars and then...
My mom says I was 2 when she... I mean, I'm sure they re-released it a couple of times, you know, given that there were no VHS rentals
also,
and stuff like that and cable television.
It ran for like a year, year and a half at the theaters.
Oh, there you go.
Literally.
So, yeah,
I mean, it was just like, it didn't leave.
So if I saw it close to when it came out, which would have been like that, you know, 1980 summertime, around 4. So I do remember distinctly, like, thing is, I've always been like a real detail freak, and my mom is a real good teacher, and even now in our family, like, she introduced my nephew, who is... 4 himself, just like a year ago, she introduced him to all the Star Wars films, and of course, under my instruction, had him watch the original ones first before the prequels. And he's real sharp kid. And mom tells me I was too. I don't know what happened, but no. when you explain it, when you break it down a little bit and just give right. a little bit of a preview, like look for this character, look for that situation, right. then even little tiny kids can really okay. follow along with the film. So, and again, the mythic archetypes of this are like
yeah, I'm just,
super easy.
I'm just curious because I came to it at 18. You know,
right.
It didn't exist before I was 18, so it's just like, for me, it hit us, you know, in certain different ways. I was just
sure,
curious.
You know what's funny, too, is that I think probably when I was a kid, I didn't even realize it wasn't a kid movie, you know?
Sure.
Oh.
Well, you see it through the eyes of a child, and right. you don't really, you're not really thinking in those terms necessarily.
And it still played,
I mean,
it still had every level of fantasy like that existed in everything that was being marketed towards children in the 80s, you know, which everything we watched had some sort was probably just based off of Star Wars in some manner of, you know, of a sense. So it just kind of.
And to piggyback on that, one of the revolutionary things about the Star Wars movies at this time was the branding, the product branding, like
yep.
The level of like toys that connected to the film that were released as well, which definitely drew in that child demographic.
Yep.
Right. We're going to keep on talking about this, but we're going to get started. So,
that's a good idea.
Like Otto, please get ready. And okay. So 3, 2, 1, play.
Good job, Otto.
Thank you, Otto.
Please don't shoot me from the booth.
You have all of mine
here. Okay, greatest opening
Yay!
In any movie ever
yeah.
is the Star Wars. This beats just any movie opening ever.
Yep.
Just the Star Wars. It's just fantastic.
And how much percentage of that is the music?
It's
wow.
It's all combination. Now,
like 99.
Yeah. So we're sitting in the theater, okay? We've heard it's The Empire Strikes Back, and we see episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back, and we're like, what? I'm sure I'd read about it, but at the time, there was an article in Time Magazine. I will swear up and down, and I'm not kidding you. Lucas said there were 9 episodes.
Yes, I read
that.
He
said it was 4, 5, and 6. He'd go back to 1, 2, and 3, and 7, 8, and 9 would be afterwards. And later he said, no, it didn't exist. Like he tried to erase history.
Yeah,
imagine.
I heard something about that.
Imagine him
yeah.
totally, revisioning.
It was totally that. And it's like,
shocking.
5?
Shocking.
What? That means the other one's 4? What? So it took a little time to process all that because Star Wars was Star Wars. That's it.
Do you know if the original release of the first Star Wars film had episode 4 at the top of the scroll?
It did not. It just said it's Star Wars and then came in with a scroll.
Okay.
And it didn't have the title or anything. Just started with mm-hmm. the... Mm-hmm. Afterwards, when they went back, they put A New Hope there.
And
A New Hope is an awful title. But
you haven't lived until you've been in the theater where you have to look over your left shoulder to start the sentence to read it, and then all the way to your right
yeah.
shoulder to finish those lines.
Right,
that's
exactly.
the experience. That's where it's at.
You
baby.
Were sitting,
Perfect.
Pretty close there,
second row center, as I told you.
Oh man, I can't. Just yeah, the way my eyes
70
are,
millimeter.
I got to sit back. I can't stay that close.
70
I
millimeter.
Like
they shot this in 70 millimeter. I didn't
Sorry?
Know that. They shot this in 70 millimeter.
They blew it up to 70 millimeter.
Oh, okay.
But that tilt, and once again, they have the tilt down, the trademark tilt down from Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
They kept it here,
yep.
And of course, we see the villain at the very beginning
right.
of the film.
And this movie also opens with a shot of a Star Destroyer, which the first one also did.
That's yep. right.
And probably one of the most parodied
Absolutely. Thinking of Spaceballs,
yeah.
particularly.
But what, in good structure, what you want to do is you want to have your villain appear at the beginning.
Really? I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. You always, in some way, you want to have your villain
Why
appear.
Is that good?
Because then you know who the villain is. Yeah, you know who the obstacle is right
yeah.
away.
Gotcha.
And they're, clearly, if they send things that explode, they're evil. When you're in Norway now. This was shot in Norway.
No, it wasn't. This is Hoth, Serge.
Gosh, Serge.
Yeah.
This is real
Dang.
Life.
Wasn't Hoth one of the Cartwright brothers on Bonanza? Sorry.
In your world.
I like the special effects because they really blended everything pretty well. And I got to say, even for the laser, for all this, as grainy as it looks, the laser disc transfer, but it's pretty darn good. Look at that.
Yeah.
And that's actually
it's not distracting.
That's stop motion animation. And that actually, yeah. I'm a real critic of stop motion.
I love
And
stop
that
motion
is
animation.
Really good stop motion.
Yeah, their stop motion in this was second to none.
Yes.
And you can compare it to like all kinds of movies throughout time. And really, this is one of the top.
Except
oh,
the,
for sure.
Except the when top. The Tauntaun dies.
Yeah, that's a
that's
little
the only,
a little
the
bit.
Only
yeah.
one I object to. I love the laser scope.
I will say that this is the best. installment music-wise that John Williams did.
Mm.
His work
sure
on this for
you.
The score is freaking phenomenal.
Not to mention the fact that the editing together, the timing of the music as well within scenes is brilliant. It really carries the movie in so many ways, just like the first one. And that's actually one of the issues I have with Special Edition is there are many points at which they didn't, in adding things, take the time to really artfully set up the timing again of the music at those scenes.
Well, that's the whole thing is because there was nothing, I'm sorry to say, artful about the special editions. It's always about adding stupid crap.
Yeah.
I thought this was, you know, I mean, watching it, I can, you know, me being a filmmaker, I can see some of the seams of where they didn't show something because they didn't have something. It's like, okay, we can get around it, you know, where they made choices out of necessity.
But sometimes I think that's something we'd spoken of before, is sometimes it's the limitations which make, you know, one be more creative and come up with a better way to tell a story than just like the obvious way.
Right.
So let's, talk the first three films versus the last three films on that very principle.
Right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I wanted to point out that the DP on this is Peter Sushitsky, who I thought did a fantastic job in lighting this. It's a little different than Star Wars, which I think is fine. I don't think the transfer necessarily to Laserdisc was that good, but here Sushitsky's at least work really kind of, and how he lit it was a lot different. It's a lot darker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
right away.
Light right away. There is that darker feel with the lights.
This being the darkest installment of the
exactly, and I like how we're reintroduced
to all the main players right away.
All the main players in the main settings. We've got like a control room, and then we see a 3PO, but it's not R3PO. It's little things, and she's looking the whole time.
And we should mention Irvin Kershner, who just passed away not too long ago. Yeah.
He directed it, and he was Lucas's instructor at USC.
Oh yeah, that's I forgot about that.
That's why he turned to him. Yeah, and I like here we're set up right away. I remember this. It's just like, yeah, he's got to go. It's like Han's got to go. So you know, you already have a feeling of there has been stuff that's happened in between Star Wars. Sorry,
absolutely.
And here I'll always refer to it as Star Wars.
That's what it's called, right?
Yeah.
Well, A New Hope.
Right, but
yeah, but we know what you mean.
Okay, but I mean, yeah, exactly.
Purist and all.
So,
but that is, I mean, that's a really smart storytelling device that they do in the beginning. You know that there's been things happening between these characters over time. I mean, even right away when Luke gets on, you know, and comes over to Han, you know, and he's like, "What's up, old buddy?" or whatever. You know what I mean? You know that now their relationship has evolved a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
There was actually a whole subplot that they cut out of this where the monster that attacks Luke, they actually invaded this base.
Oh, I think I did hear that.
I think
that,
they shot a lot of it, and they didn't shoot some of it, and they just decided to cut it all out.
Was it a lot of stop motion or guys in suits?
I think it was guys in suits, and the guys in suits didn't look good. I don't know. Oh. You can look up the reason, you know, the reasons for it.
This
is just great.
Yeah.
Right from the top, he's got this thing going with her.
It's great dialogue stuff. And by the way,
chemistry.
Talk about lighting. She is lit in this sort of, you know, like she's showcased, and he's just got this like sort of backlight silhouette thing, but it totally works. It seems organic. You can still see
him. You know, I never picked this up before until I started watching the beginning again. They're talking about using a heater. So clearly they melted something.
Yeah.
I've seen this many times, though. I haven't seen this in a number of years. I always miss that line.
Mm-hmm.
And I just like the roughness of it. I like the fact that Chewie's like taking apart the Millennium Falcon when he's trying to get out of there.
Which makes you wonder if there's some kind of little... If that's indicating Chewie's motivation. Like maybe... He doesn't agree with Han a little bit about whether or not they should
go. Right, they should go. Yeah.
Maybe they still have a good thing here. So, oh, my bad. I just pulled both of those.
I always love the looseness of the direction. I mean, here, the fresh thing, he puts his hand over 3PO's mouth.
Yeah. By the way, that's an interesting comment, looseness of the direction. I think that really worked, though, for this cast because they're all experienced. They've already done a movie as these characters together, and that works really well later in the Carbonite scene.
Right.
Yes. Yep. Oh.
Well, and I think that that's something that's missing from the reboot. You know, like, it's not that... I'm not going to say I hate them, and I'm not going to say whatever. Like, I just honestly don't even care that much. They can just be. But what... And I'm not going to be upset with, you know, like George Lucas gave fans what fans wanted, which was more Star Wars. You know, that's what he was like. You want more Star Wars? Here's more Star Wars. And it comes from his brain and it's his own thing. But the thing is Star Wars isn't just George Lucas.
Yeah,
and that's
which I don't
what
think
he
realizes.
He doesn't realize. Yeah. And I think a lot of people don't realize that there is a magic in this cast. There's like lightning in a bottle, that whole like, you know, pulled together that attitude. You can tell. I mean, now as an adult, I watched all three of these movies, you know, one right after another when I was younger. So, like, there wasn't, like, whether or not, like, Luke and Leia were ever going to be together, that was never even a thought in my mind because I got, like, right to the meat of the story.
Right.
But you can tell that because of the chemistry between, you know, the Han and Leia characters, just because of the actors, that's what drove the story to change, you
know? Absolutely. Absolutely.
How much of what we really like about these films is really just because of the circumstances?
I want to just point something out here. This is a plant. Basically, he's, first of all, how do you even think of that? You know, freeze his feet upside down, but he's hanging upside down. Mm-hmm. This is basically, this pays off at the end. Remember when he falls down and he's hanging upside down?
Right.
From the antenna.
Right.
This is a plan for that payoff.
Right.
At the end.
Oh, interesting.
Which is a great story structure.
And also symbolically.
Yeah.
Visually, symbolically, it's great. I mean, it works and here. It works within the plot. And then it works at the end to tie it back together in terms of what's going on. And here, this is all you need of the monster to see
right.
it.
And in terms of the force, this is the first time that we've seen anyone move something with the force, by
yep.
the way. And
much less Luke.
Coming into this, yeah, you don't even know that's necessarily possible. We've seen Darth Vader choke somebody. But we haven't seen him pick stuff up and throw it around or anything
right.
like that, right?
Right.
And so that I remember that scene when I was young really captured my imagination. Just the whole idea. And, you know, I mean, I'm not the only one, I'm sure, that stayed in my room putting my hand out towards something trying to get it to, like, jump into my hand after seeing
it. Maybe you were.
But I don't think so.
But actually, that captured all of our imaginations.
Absolutely.
Because there was nothing, you know, who talked about the Force and all the religion thing, but the whole thing of having it manifest and working it so well into this world. I mean, now I'm thinking about it abstract. I'm like, that is a really weird thing.
You have this
like, scientific world, and you have this magical force that you can make things... You know, telekinetically.
But that's what's so special about these films is the integration.
Yeah.
Can I speak of magic and science? You
yeah,
know,
exactly.
And that's what was always existing in really great myth of all ages.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it's something that completely passed me by when I just kind of accepted it as part of what it was, and I've forgotten it. But now looking back, I'm like,
yeah,
it's really, 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 really interesting. Another thing is that he had Mark Hamill's face had changed because he'd had a car accident.
That's right.
And he had to have reconstructive surgery. And I think they kind of worked it into whatever here for that.
I had heard a rumor once that they actually added the Wampa scene to justify the change in his face.
Oh, okay.
I'd heard that rumor. I don't know if it's true, but
I can dig it.
But yeah, he was almost killed in that accident, right?
I really?
Mean, he got really messed
serious.
Up. He's in the hospital for a while. They had to delay shooting.
Now, Dennis Muren was big in the effects on this film, right? As far as
I believe
so. ILM, this is Dennis Muren did tons of stuff on this.
Yeah.
What else did Muren do?
He worked at ILM. He worked on all of them, I think.
Oh, okay.
So
he was ground level, right?
One thing I think that... it's great lighting. One thing to remember about... Oh, actually, you know, there is a kind of a continuity flub. The movie, the door had started moving already in that shot. Sorry. And now it starts moving, but it's okay.
Yeah.
You kind of forgive it.
That's sort of like the stormtrooper hitting his head on the door in the back on the first film.
Exactly. Now, Marsha Lucas, that was a great push-in on her. Mm-hmm. See, this kind of fulfilled... Star Wars kind of laid it all out and did it really well. And this kind of was able to move it. It was shot a lot differently. Star Wars was shot with a lot of telephoto.
Right.
This isn't. I mean, this is actually got wider lenses going, not really super wide, but how it's composed is differently. But the main difference is the main thing about the trilogy is that Marsha Lucas was involved in the editing on all first three films.
Right.
And then she went away. She didn't, you know, because obviously they had split. I think they'd split by somewhere around Jedi or something around that.
Hmm.
But she was the one that was credited essentially, if I believe what I read, with bringing out in Star Wars there were three editors and they won the Oscars for editing. She was the one who would go bring the emotion to the scenes, and then the other one bring the action, another one bring plot, and that kind of thing.
I'd always heard that.
So I think that's part of what we saw, you know, in the later films is essentially the magic that Marsha Lucas was able to, you know, and chemistry between a director and an editor is absolutely important.
True. And, you know, if you want to get into a bigger level concepts on that, no artist can ever really operate in a vacuum. You know, I mean, that's the most you can do that maybe if you want to get into the arts in general is like, you know, stand up comedy or, you know, like singing songs and playing a guitar on stage. Past that, you need people to help you. You know,
right.
You need support crew and you need people that are good at what they do.
Right.
And I felt like in the prequels that was lacking because George Lucas has become such a powerhouse that he just doesn't need to have or feels like he doesn't need to have that. It's like he makes the final decisions on everything.
Well, it's not a collaboration. It's not a project. Right. It's just one person's voice, and everybody needs an editor. You know, any great story ever written has been edited.
Right. And every time that I've
and Ben Burtt did, you know, edit essentially the prequels, but I'm not dissing his editing, but you know,
well, I'm not even talking about just like film editing. I'm talking about like, you know, just editing the story, editing the ideas.
Oh, Tauntaun Guts.
The Tauntaun Guts was really
That was visceral, very graphic.
The other thing I wanted to point out is when we, you know, first saw essentially Ben talking to Luke, and we're thinking, is it a dream? And then it goes away. We didn't know. We thought, okay, Luke is basically hallucinating. You didn't know. I mean, though you could believe maybe it's Obi-Wan come back, and obviously later we go like, okay, he did come back.
You mean Ben? It was Ben. Old Ben.
Heidi prefers the more familiar name.
Obi-Wan Ben Kenobi. It was Ben Kenobi on Star on Tatooine. Here he's Obi-Wan.
What I remember...
I'm sorry, Tim. I just want to mention this quickly. It's going to come back later. Basically, after this film, we all know what happens in this film. You know, people bring up the thing that maybe Obi-Wan was a clone and his name was Obi-Wan. And that's where his name had come from. Well, you don't roll your eyes at me.
I've never heard that before, and that's a bit of a stretch.
I really think that's like a huge stretch.
Enhance the character.
And I heard his blood type was OB negative.
This is... Laugh it up, fuzzball.
Oh, that's funny.
That was a good one.
That was pre-internet. Seriously, that was back in the day. This is the scene we're going to look at later.
Was it like a pot-smoking hippie who came up with that idea? Because that sounds like...
No, it wasn't a pot-smoking hippie.
A long-digested...
When Darth Vader talks to the Emperor, and it's important that we watch this version, actually. Yeah. When he talks to the Emperor, you look at the Emperor's face. That's Alec Guinness's face with someone else's eyes. Look at it. And I know other people noticed, and I read it somewhere, and I noticed that. And that's what I was like, that's Alec Guinness, so what's the deal? Maybe they're all... No, don't give me that look again.
Some of the Emperor's maybe a clone?
I'm processing, Serge.
I don't know.
Everybody's a clone.
But that's...
that's we're done.
But this is the kind of conjecture that was between 1980 and 1983.
This is the problem with doing prequels, I find, too, is that everybody had already, like, filled their imaginations full of ideas of what happened leading up to this or what it all means and what happened before this. Did we really need to know? Did there have to be some sort of concrete, this is exactly what happened?
And we didn't. The whole, you know, quite frankly, seeing the whole thing in Revenge of the Sith of Obi-Wan and Anakin fighting, I was like, we're seeing it. It was anticlimactic. It's like, well, but I know what happened, kind of, but now I'm just seeing it physicalized, and in my mind, it was better. Exactly. In the mind, it was better. Left to legend, as opposed to now going back and seeing what it was like, it kind of took some of the air out of the tire.
Yeah, and honestly, it's really hard to go back. And I think a good example of a movie that worked to do that was the newest Star Trek film, the J.J. Abrams directed Star Trek film.
Right.
Because that it was almost like reintroducing the characters.
But they reinvented the whole film.
But you do have to realize that it was a blank slate, like general things were there, but that level of creativity could have existed on the prequels with the right people involved, with the right
team. But they also did a wonderful thing where they wrote themselves into an alternate timeline, so then they can do anything they want and it doesn't shift with any other thing that you've imagined from the previous timeline.
Right, because you don't know how anything is going to end.
But watching
it's the cleverest reboot.
Yeah, definitely. So clever. Yeah,
this was great. This is great. When she
kisses her brother. Spoiler alert.
It's really disgusting.
But now I gotta say, I related more to Luke, like for many, many years up till maybe like after college.
Oh, okay.
And I was like I remember thinking, you know, at least probably closer to 1983 before Return of the Jedi came out. Yes. I remember thinking, oh, I hope Luke gets Leia. Like that was kind of more. I identify more with Luke, and so I
never felt that way.
Even
when I saw the very first film, I was like, I was on Team Han, like right away. Like I, not only did I want Leia to like choose Han, I wanted to be Han. Do you know what I mean? Like that's like that's who I wanted to be. Like in the whole scenario of the story, like I wanted to be like the gun wielding, you know, cowboy guy who like out of all the characters to really connect to, I always like. That was my number one connection. He didn't get a sword, which sucks. but he had the attitude.
But he's got trickery and a blaster and a giant Wookiee.
Right. And he shot.
And that's all you need.
Yeah.
He shot first.
He's a cool guy. He's so cool. Like, coolness just like drips off of him.
And
it's
why
ridiculous.
Did Han shoot first? Because he's a badass. But that's and he's not good.
I liked Luke in the first film, just and sad. I liked Han in the second film. And in the third film, Harrison Ford, well, he was kind of there.
He was kind of there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I heard he didn't care for doing the third film.
He didn't care for doing the third film. You can tell in his performance.
Well, he was already moved on to Indiana Jones. Let's just be honest. True. Let's be honest.
Yes, he had moved on.
What I do remember from this film, when it came out, everyone was pretty traumatized at how dark it was. Oh, no one was expecting
true.
This. Star
true.
Wars, yay, ha ha, hee hee. And everyone came out of the theater going, oh my gosh. They were just traumatized.
No doubt. By the way, this is like one of the best like villain reintroductions themes. And the theme especially. Tim, you should talk about that, but I just love the whole, like, no, there was no context for a super Star Destroyer.
But I love like the shadow just like, yeah. Even on a Star Destroyer, there is a shadow on it.
Yep.
And we're all looking at pre-CGI.
Yeah.
Yep.
These are models. They're
model
beautiful.
Effects.
It's all holding up pretty well. And we're reintroduced to Darth, who we mm-hmm. saw flying off.
Who yeah. clearly has been polishing his helmet more often.
Well, he's had someone polish his helmet.
Ooh, is that code for something?
Uh-oh. I just mean he polished his helmet.
Oh, okay.
Probably buffed it.
Oh, man. Well, never mind.
No, seriously, though, it's more reflective in this film.
Never mind.
And I don't know what that did, except it made him seem a little bit more ethereal, I thought.
Yeah, maybe a little more menacing.
Concrete. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's a great set.
I like it. It's fantastic.
The lower level there. Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Just very imaginative.
I like how they're all basically watching because they're all scared of him. From right.
He rules by fear.
I love it that this guy like gets lippy. Like he's talking down to him like he's a child or something. It's like, dude, how do you think that's going to end? I'm just saying.
Not well.
Darth, you know, he's into killing folks. So, I'm just saying.
Right. And it's interesting, of course, the plot for, well, Darth Vader's goal is to find, essentially, Luke, because he knows Luke is out there. Mm-hmm. So, and of course, he knows that Luke is his son.
But spoiler Luke, alert. Spoiler alert.
It's his son? What?
Do I really have to say that? Okay, fine. At the front, on the... everything here is a spoiler.
It's another great set. I love the full scale Millennium Falcon.
I like that. So I turn it on. It's like everything's.
Wouldn't that be great to have in your backyard?
Now this is a gag.
It is in my backyard.
Ooh.
I'm just kidding.
But that's a gag that they're planning now. That the whole thing is they flip a switch on and something goes wrong. That sets it up for the gag with the hyperdrive.
Right.
It sets it up for the plot point slash gag. And then the last one is like, it's not my fault. It's not my fault. When Lando's flying, and the hyperdrive doesn't work.
And he's off on his quest.
Yes.
Farewell, friends. I split.
Mm-hmm. See you in a bit. Catch you on the flip side.
But I like that you know. I think this film sets up right away that this is the kind of movie it's going to be. It's going to be a quest film, and they're going to be separate. Even when he sees, you know, the apparition in the tundra of old Ben Kenobi, my neighborhood best friend.
A.K.A. Obi-Wan.
But even then, I think supposedly. That's only maybe 10 minutes in, you know, and that's already set up. He's like, you have to go and study with, you know, my mentor. We already know this is the kind of film it is.
Well exactly. And we know that basically now what was set up in the first film, whereas he's got powers, right. Now he's got to be trained.
Right.
Sort of very Japanese, like, you know, Japanese martial arts film. As far as that whole mentor, trainer.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Sensei.
Okay, so now here's, I think the scene's coming up.
By the way, just a little actor note. Yes. This guy that plays the Admiral is one of the villains in Indiana Jones, The Last Crusade. Remember, he's the...
Right.
What is the guy's name? He shoots Sean Connery at the end to prove the chalice. They heal him to prove the chalice is real.
I don't remember.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. I forget his name.
Now, here's the Emperor.
No, that's later.
Oh,
this is
right.
Where
right.
he chokes
this is
the
not.
Lippy dude.
Oh, that's right.
This is the scene that,
Lippy
that
man.
Creates all of the jokes about how the Empire's like the place where you can advance the quickest in your career. You serve on the ship that Darth Vader's on and don't be the top guy.
That's right.
You will move up.
That's right. Don't get lippy with Vader and you'll be fine. And there he goes. I love this like little like.
I would never want to work for them.
The little right? The little head nod. It's like clean this up, clean
Who
this
has
up.
To Whatever. Do that.
Well, you know, that guy's clearly the smarter of the two, and mm-hmm. and he had to have seen it coming. Like, that guy had a clear sense of fear in his eyes when Darth Vader came up and started talking. The other guy's just like, whatever. And this guy's like, oh.
Well, maybe he doesn't kill someone every day, you know.
No, that's true.
So he's just taking the risk, living a little, trying to have, you know, his own purpose and decision-making skills.
I will say, though, there's a line later that actually makes it seem more confusing. And for years when I was a kid, I totally didn't catch this. And I thought that he had killed someone else and moved another guy up. I thought he killed that guy. And that's, you know, all those guys, a bunch of white guys in the same uniform. They look the same. Okay. I'm just saying.
All those white guys.
All those white guys.
They all look the same.
They do. So,
all those white guys with the English accents.
And they all are like, you know, captain or admiral or somebody, right? So thing is, like, when the guy goes to apologize later for losing the Millennium Falcon and Darth Vader kills him, he turns around to this guy who just got promoted to admiral and said, "Don't fail me again, admiral," right? But in your mind, somehow, or at least in mine when I was younger, it was like,
you
I thought there was
a
new guy who was now the admiral, and he had killed the old admiral guy. And it's like, wow, definitely a quick promotion.
I thought this was kind of lame, and they said, yay. This yay, that was a lame yay. When they say the first
person.
Yeah,
it was.
Yes, I agree. Yeah. I agree.
Honestly, all of the actors, all of the like secondary actors in the Hoth scenes are a little bit lackadaisical. Like, they all kind of are a little bit too... I don't know, deadpan, a little bit too
I'm sure they look back at this now
delivery.
And they're like, what was I thinking?
Exactly. It's like, make a name for yourself.
Acting my ass off.
I could have been the great guy in the background.
And they're like, just tired day players.
Right.
Exactly. They're like, why am I here?
This is just
this
great
is science fiction.
Just
what
great how this
world?
Was introduced. It was just great.
That I remember being like, wow. In the
and that's
theater.
Awesome to have a zoom on stop motion.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Oh, that, yeah. That's cool. Good point. Good point.
Which I think they may have shot off a TV monitor in order to give it that appearance.
Wouldn't be surprised.
But even doing it like that, that gives you that allows you to degrade the image without having to. Well, you don't have to have a really good image so that you can actually show it, and it makes it look more real.
These are amazing.
I think for the remaster, no, they didn't clean it up. It still looks pretty damn good.
Yeah, it does.
The
I remember their biggest complaint was that why do you make Hoth an ice planet? We have to do all this optical work over white.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be rough.
The lines around all your stuff, you're going to do it against a white background? Yeah. Oh, that's the worst choice in the world from a technical point of view.
And then they do attack pattern delta. I mean, come on. You know that doesn't work. Except that was pretty cool, flying through the legs.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Great just, decisions
just,
on,
just
the,
great,
on the camera angles,
you know,
and movement.
Ways to go through it. Mm-hmm.
And by the way, what better subject to make stop motion than something robotic?
Right. Because it just already fits with it. Again, they're utilizing the technology that they do have to the best of its abilities, which makes it suddenly better than anything anybody else was doing at the time, even though they had all the same tools.
Mm-hmm. But within its own limitations.
Right.
Understanding the limitations of that particular medium. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember being blown away how the camera was moving during stop motion stuff.
Oh, it was just,
because you're always used to static shots whenever there's stop motion involved.
Yeah, that's true, huh?
Yeah. Oh, is his name Hobby? Oh, Dak. It's Dak. Yeah, good luck, Dak.
The worst thing they could have done is have those explosions against a white background. It just doesn't...
There we go.
I have a feeling, too. Like, I wouldn't be surprised. If I was a DP and they told me, oh, you have to shoot
that's
like
a great
interior
shot right
shots
there
with a lot of white around...
That shot of Luke right there, what they did is they shot it down, you know, at a higher angle than all the others, looking right down at him. It was a great moment. It's a moment like of decision. He knows like he's where things are going.
Oh, yeah, where he gets the determined look on his face?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was just a great angle, great lighting.
I think you were enthralled with Luke, but would you say the DP might have shot stuff darker interior on those whites? I mean, to avoid all of the overexposure and everything?
I don't know.
I mean, that seems pretty logical.
Don't know. Oh, Wedge.
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 It would be interesting to, you know, read or watch some interviews with the crew and see exactly what they did to compensate for all the white. you know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all. I mean, that's all blue screen.
Yeah. There's a lot of blue lines around everything.
It's just all. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure in the whatever, you know, the special edition, they took all. They just cleaned all that stuff up. But sure. This holds up really, really quite well.
Mm-hmm. I think it looks fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, and this is 1980. They were doing this in 78 and 79.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I love the interactive lighting. Basically, and that was different from Star. Well, Star Wars had a little bit, but here you see all the lighting.
So smart.
The movement of the light source. Yeah.
Yeah. And you really have a sense of where everything is. Mm-hmm. But the thing that's, I mean, I remember striking me is that as much as they're having success, you can already feel, and this is like so different than most films, that they're already losing. See that, yep. that shot right there of Luke's ability, but you know that it's not going to come out good, and they're putting up the battle, which is such a different kind of trope than we're ever used to, and we hardly ever see that.
Well, and that's what's so great about all three of the first films is that you're constantly on this uphill battle with your characters, you know, that you're following. They're just always moving against this like big bad that's so much bigger than them, and every time they take two steps forward, they're taking like four steps back, and nothing's really happening, but it makes everything have so much more of a sense of urgency, and when something good does happen, it feels more valuable.
Mm.
The payoffs really pay off.
Right.
Yeah.
But and in the same respect, it's a precursor to the darkness of this, that this is not, you know, they're mm-hmm. not going to win in this one. And that was what was so upsetting about this film, is that at the end, they didn't win.
Yeah, there are a lot mm-hmm. of losses in this.
Oh, yeah. It was very dark ending.
Let me ask a little trivia, if either of you ever heard this. It may have just been my mind as a little kid filling stuff in, but I thought I remembered that one of the original versions of this had some X-Wings mixed in with the snowspeeders when they went out to take the guys out. Not the close-up stuff, but like that first shot where they showed a bunch of ships.
I don't think they had. No, the X-Wings, I think what they had is the X-Wings were later. They had them for like escaping, but all the ships that were to battle, the AT-ATs, were whatever they call these. Because what does happen, I love that his ship gets like electrified.
Yeah.
Because what happens is at the rendezvous point, they have his X-Wing waiting for him with R2. That's what
I
saw.
That's what you just saw. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, I mean, because obviously the speeders are made for, you know, interplanetary travel, not extraplanetary travel.
Right, and that's why they didn't use them there. But now you're just reminding me. I just remember when seeing the X-Wings from the original Star Wars, just how captivating all that was to the imagination.
Yeah, the design of them. I mean, you just had never thought of a spaceship that way before.
Just never seen anything. And the way they shot it and the way they moved and everything was just great.
Mm-hmm. By the way, that was a really cool shot that they had, like, I don't know if they mixed miniatures. I don't think they did because I didn't see any lines, but having, like, a practical AT-AT foot, that's pretty cool.
This is really funny. I mean, even here they managed to get some humor in. It's like, I'm not leaving until you
and
leave.
And that, again, is something that's missing from prequels.
Right here, he goes to get her and she walks right by.
Right? See, and there's humor in all three of the original Star Wars films, but it's not trying too hard. It's not obvious. It works with the
scene.
It's
natural
and the
humor.
Characters.
It's life humor.
Right.
And they're
right.
good, nice reliefs along the way.
Yep. Yeah.
And there's no one that's just like there just to be silly and make jokes.
Right.
Right.
Like a certain character that shall not be named. Mm. I don't want to say that name.
May I?
You can say the name if you want to. I don't want to say
it. You're going to have to slap me upside the head, so I'm not going to do it.
Okay, good.
Good.
I don't want to hear it.
Okay.
It's not his fault.
Can I say what he says?
Nope.
Beady.
That's Buck Rogers.
Oh, that's a whole different animal, buddy.
That's Mel Blanc.
Yeah, and that was good stuff.
Beady.
By the way. I used to watch that when I was a kid.
It's the same thing.
I love this set with the work, with the moving legs.
I don't mind, giving Mel Blanc work, but really. I almost thought that was great. Yeah, just get up there, throw a grenade in there. That should work, and it'll blow the whole thing up.
Hey, why not?
Okay.
Well, it's past the outer armor.
Not like a normal grenade.
Oh.
This is a Star Wars grenade.
It's a Star Wars thermal grenade.
And it was really big, so you know that like everything else in here is smallish. It was a big grenade. Ask me where he got the
and
grenade.
And you see, it's great because then you feel like, oh, maybe they have a chance. Someone's like, no, they're not going to win.
That is a great shot. That stop motion right there where instead of just moving forward, it like shifts and repositions its weight and then takes the shot. That's awesome.
Well, like it's an animal. I mean, seriously.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, I love that feeling like it
seems alive.
To understand the expectations, when I saw this the first time, I thought they got the generator. Wait, they're not supposed to get the generator. It made no sense to me because that's not what happens. You're supposed to win, but in some kind of way. So I really like the turnabout of it. I mean, it definitely was different.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
This film is really wall-to-wall music.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Kind of is.
But you know what? That's okay.
The only time when there isn't music, I think, is on stuff to do with Dagobah. They have silences there. But yeah,
I think
pretty
so.
Much
the soundtrack essentially
that.
Serves as your music, so to speak.
By the way, this scene, throwback again to the first movie where they came on to mm-hmm. the...
Right.
Where they came on to Leia's ship.
Right.
Only now we're 34 something. Minutes in.
Right. And interestingly, they changed his helmet for this. It's shorter. In the first one, it was longer, more samurai-esque. Mm-hmm. It was closer to his shoulders, and they made it shorter for this one. I think they made it longer again for Return.
I wonder why they did that. Do you know?
I remember watching something where they were just like playing with the design, just kind of trying to tweak it, make it a little better, worse, whatever, and it just didn't work as well. Yeah.
Now, what I like here is, I just remembered being surprised by it, and I still think it does surprise me. Like, of course, here you have the gag again. It's not starting.
Right.
So he pulls a Fonz. Mm-hmm. One in a second. Oh, man.
Gosh, I just love the chemistry between them.
Totally.
Here's the Fonz.
This is great.
You don't see... Boom.
Yeah.
Everyone laughed so hard.
Yes.
It's the Fonz move.
They're eating it up with a spoon.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And now, of course, they're setting up the laser gun. And this was so cool. I mean, she just did not expect any of
it.
Even Leia's impressed. She's like, oh, that's cool.
Got some tricks up his sleeve.
And even just now, I just want to point out this one thing, which just caught me by surprise and to go like, oh, but for some reason it did. Mm-hmm. He says, punch it.
Punch it, Chewie.
Oh, you know, sorry. For some reason, that surprised me. I'm confusing with Star Wars. When Star Wars did punch it, they actually went out backwards, and that kind of surprised me. I confused it. I'm conflating films.
Which film are you thinking of?
Star Wars. When they actually pull out of like some place, they're actually pulling up backwards, and everything's going backwards.
Oh, probably when they're leaving the Death Star.
Yeah, I think.
Wow,
that's
the blue
one
R2 is like really popping against
was.
All the other colors. All
right. And that's a nice little practical X-Wing front that they just popped in there.
Mm-hmm. I love the practical bits.
Yeah, look, they only built like about a quarter of the X-Wing there.
That's all you need. Put on a little bit of a lift.
But it's so lovely because it looks so much more real because it's tangible.
Right.
You know that they could touch it.
Totally.
You know, that's...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, when Sarah and I were just referring to working on Return of Pink 5 together and...
That's we had a quarter...
It was like an eighth or a sixth, really. Because you had the whole cockpit, right? And then part of two of the engines and a landing gear. Yeah, maybe a quarter, actually.
It was a quarter X-Wing.
Yeah, looked really cool.
Cool.
Have you seen the Pink 5 videos yet?
Uh-uh.
Oh.
No, you've got to go to pink5.com. PINKFIVE.com.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, and yes, all of you listeners.
Folks out there, go to pink5.com. Our friend Trey...
Trey Stokes.
Made those with a bunch of friends.
Extremely
some
creative
friends.
Guy. Trey should have directed the prequels. That would have been cool.
That's a whole other story.
I'm just saying.
I'd still be down, to see like some far-off sequel.
They spent a lot of time in that little cockpit set in this movie, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
The moves that he did with, that they had him do, essentially, were amazing. The whole thing where he's flying between the ships. Look at that.
Yeah. It's like definitely one-upping anything you saw in the first one.
Right. And again, on a big screen, it was jaw-dropping.
And without doing the CGI where you have to cram a million things into there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry. Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Right. Nope. Exactly.
Amen.
Yep. Just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Exactly.
Yep.
By the way, I love the physicality of Han Solo especially and Chewbacca in when they're flying the Millennium Falcon, combined with the editing of the movement of the ship, really is very effective. Like we can still outmaneuver. He does this thing and then cut to outside, and it's so great.
I love this. I just love the whole thing. He's just hanging out down this.
There's a butt shot for you, Heidi. Did you like that?
Yeah, you enjoy that.
And of course they set up the gag. It's like really stupid. Yes, put the toolbox right there, and then of course they hit something, and he goes. Ow. It's so dumb.
It's funny.
But it's
so good. It works.
Classic movie telling like elements. Like, this is it, there's a lot of feeling to these films of, you know, old school Hollywood.
And it's camaraderie. Yeah. I mean, you're part of the gang.
Right,
you get to hang out with your gang in this movie.
And part of hanging out with your gang is getting some tools knocked on your head. But whatever, you know, it's like,
It's camaraderie. Yep. And we're missing that in those last three movies. I don't have any camaraderie with any of these characters.
Yeah.
Come on, Amidala has camaraderie with, never mind. Okay.
Please.
R2-D2? That's not what you're going to say.
It just doesn't
close
work.
Enough.
I'm trying, just and
saying.
It's just not
Keira
working.
Knightley?
And here we go.
Or Sofia Coppola. Oh, now this is all practical. How did they? This is amazing.
And listen to that brass. This music cue. The asteroid field music cue is one of John Williams' most incredible, finest.
I remember just like sitting on the edge of my seat the first time I saw this.
You can't, even watching this, you're like,
but multi-channel sound with a 70 millimeter presentation, I'm telling you.
There's one where actually he goes underneath, I think it's the big one where he comes and he goes like right underneath the asteroid, the big one that he starts seeing.
Mm-hmm.
The arrangement in this piece musically, the orchestral arrangement is astounding.
This is the asteroid. There, right there.
Yep,
that is great.
And you're already thinking, how in the world did the TIE fighters make it?
All
this stuff moving.
And then of course they're doing the canyon run. It's of course he's gonna flip on his side. Oh, sorry, spoiler alert. There we go. Boom. I think they did that in Firefly.
The first two notes of that love theme are the first two notes of the Indiana Jones love theme, by the way.
Hey, okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Marion's theme is very close to this theme.
Ah. Well, you know, John Williams is an artist and he likes his certain things.
And look at this move. This move
is just a great move with the background.
Beautiful. The whole way the camera
and
just
the camera
elegant.
Move. Yeah, yeah.
Elegantly
that tunnel,
moves.
Yeah. Beautifully done.
And that's all practical. There's no CGI to it. And don't ask me how, but there's... CGI would make it a little too dry, the movement.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Well, there's a sense of like it not being high stakes when your mind tells you it's an image.
Yep.
Even and even though we know in our minds this is real, it still looks practical.
It looks real.
And that tells your mind something else, and I don't know. That just does more for me.
Yep, I detach. Obvious CG.
Awful Jabba.
Oh, I want to compare it to the you ever heard of the Uncanny Valley? I think we talked about this a few things before.
Yep.
The Uncanny Valley is where what they found is when they're making automatons or any kind of, you know, what I call robots, the more human they make them look, the more we feel disturbed and that there's not something right. And it's actually to make an automaton actually look less human, so that way you can accept it for what it is, because there's, you know, obviously you can't catch the subtleties of what it is to be human. The mind deep in your lizard brain knows this is wrong. I think in CGI, perhaps, there is a bit of that same thing. You can create what seems to be almost picture identical what it is, but there may be a part of it that your brain says, it's not photoreal. It is not what I see with my eye, even though it seems
But the thing is the way we interpret what we see with our naked eye is different. We don't interpret things in a crystal clear picture image.
True.
You know, we see a lot of things. This was something that I was thinking of when we were doing the Mary Poppins commentary, is because of all the beautiful matte painting in that film, which this film also has. But it's that kind of idea. You know, sometimes when it's the most beautiful outside, if I'm up hiking or if I'm driving, there's like a picturesque view, it's almost so beautiful that it doesn't even look real. It almost looks like a painting. It almost looks a little pulled out of reality because of the way I'm interpreting that. And I always notice that. And it's seeing something like a beautiful artistic matte painting does feel a little more real. It feels more authentic to that first exposure you have to something that, you know, big. So maybe that's part of what it is. I don't really know.
Yeah. Yeah, there are ways of showing with CGI things that are so perfect, and with HD that our eyes would never see them that perfectly. And yet we're able to perceive that somehow by the way it's displayed on the thing.
Nice Jaws reference.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Hadn't thought about that Jaws thing, but I guess it was just sort of standard. Something in the water is going to get you. It pops a little
just
something.
Me watching it for the first time is all coming back. I remember all the things that kind of stood out to me. Like when he jumped off the X-Wing and he just like sinks up to his neck. I'm like, you don't expect anything like that.
Yeah.
And this doesn't happen to me very often, but it's interesting how much all the things that stuck with me from that first time or two and how vivid they were. And I think that's a testament I know we like to say that sometimes, but that's a testament actually to the strength of the filmmaking in this film.
Right.
I love R2's scream.
Yeah.
I dig that.
I think R2's voice was actually Ben Burtt making sounds and then him with some things and then tuning them.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah,
I
think that's
remember.
What it was. Yeah. I mean, not obviously all of them, but a lot of them.
A real shout out overall to the sound effects in this film. They're amazing. What this crew did.
Sound design.
To create worlds. Yeah. Worlds of sound that don't exist. Right. I mean, what
they it was the first time that sort of thing had been done.
Really been done. Really to this level. And what they did and created here, they set a precedence for how this industry and would handle that from then on.
Yep.
Without computer programs to do it, as far as the way it's done now for editing and mixing.
Well, I mean, they did use computers for the motion control. That they absolutely did, but they did it to have all practical effects.
Right.
Yeah.
This is a great moment. I love... This is the first time that we see Darth Vader without his helmet on.
Absolutely.
And I love the look on this guy's face, like, ooh.
You know, now we're getting the mysteries. Part of the mystery is starting to get peeled back. So, of course, everyone thinks, oh, no, what happened to Darth Vader?
That was huge. That was a big deal to see that.
Big.
I remember that.
Yeah. I was like, oh, boy. You know.
I've always thought Darth Vader seems too subtle. Musically, it just... I can't put my finger on it, but yeah.
You don't get what it's after?
No, I don't get what it's saying.
All right.
Maybe it's just me, but you know,
could have kicked it up a notch.
Mm-hmm, yeah,
you know,
I love the lights.
Maybe make you pee your pants while you're watching.
Now, the way they lit the Millennium Falcon here than in Star Wars is a lot different with all the lights.
See, I'm a fan of that lighting right there. That's cool.
Yeah.
Oh, even before.
Yeah, it looks great.
But how they put all the lights in it as opposed to when in Star Wars? I know they had some, but however it was lit, it wasn't as effective.
Oh, yeah, good point.
I really like the way
the instrumentation it was lights definitely are kind of a new thing for this one.
Yeah. Oh, the dialogue. Well, Lawrence Kasdan did the dialogue. Now, Lee Brackett, I think, wrote the first pass or wrote the outline, and I guess that was with George Lucas, but she passed away in the middle of that. So Lawrence Kasdan was brought in. And he's the one who, you know, sat down with Lucas and really hashed the whole thing. That's a great line.
Yeah.
I got to tell you.
It's back to dialogue. And what you were saying, though, the banter between everyone is so authentic, and everyone has their own way of speaking.
Right.
Yes.
That's unique to them.
And what's great about that line is that, you know, she hasn't really had to say very much. She hasn't had very much to say in the film. And that's all she had to say with that one thing where, like, holy crap, this is what's going on. So I just thought it was a great line. But I think the relationship is actually really well developed in this film.
Yep.
In this particular part of the story, they can tell that.
I actually think
that
it's one of the best love story films ever made as well.
See, and the problem is in Jedi, once she's rescued him, there's nowhere for the relationship to go.
Right, because
that's part of the
they're
problem.
Together.
Exactly.
Yeah, they sort of try to keep you hanging until the end when she reveals to Han that Lucas, her brother,
but that was lame.
It was either too long to wait before that moment, or there wasn't enough to really kind of carry
but
it along.
But I do like watching
him
squirm a little bit, though. Especially when we all know.
That's because girls like to see guys crawl through glass on their bellies.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
Oh, I forgot about that. You're
evil,
right.
Evil girls.
So this was all shot in England?
They shot all three of the films. In fact, I think they shot the prequels they shot.
Pinewood? Is it Pinewood? No.
Is it?
My knee-jerk reaction would be yes.
What do I want to say? Elstree, but it could be.
Frank Oz. Hello, Frank Oz.
Hello, Frank Oz. One of, if not the best puppeteers in history and one of the best puppet-based characters ever.
Absolutely.
Yoda.
And to be honest with you, apart from the whole thing where they were trying to get him to do like flippy lightsaber moves and stuff in the prequels, I really think that they should have stuck with puppeteering him. Not episode one level, because that was a little jerky, but if they had the talent in a person to do this level, why would you do a CGI character?
Why would you? This is amazing. It really is.
He seems like a believable being.
Right.
He seems alive.
But that's the thing, is you use your limitations. And the thing is, they expanded their limitations and, you know.
But this is also in the great era of Jim Henson puppetry as well. You know
that's
what I mean?
True.
Right.
Dark Crystal.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
It's fantastic. Mm. Yeah.
I always thought this was interesting. He's fishing. We don't know who Yoda is. He's fishing mm-hmm. through his things. And it's just a little subtle thing. You go like, ah, but I always thought it was interesting. Mm-hmm. He's like looking through and you don't know what the hell he's doing. It's like Ben, you know, Ben Kenobi. Oh, you're Obi-Wan. What is he like? He likes a flashlight, which is like a lightsaber.
Mm-hmm. And if you look closely, he definitely has like the standard Jedi sort of, you know, robe and mm-hmm. little, you know, smock on.
Yeah.
But you don't really think about that. Like, at least I didn't when I watched this. I don't remember them revealing ahead of time that this was Yoda before the movie came out.
I remember that being a surprise. I came into this, I had no idea who he was.
Right.
I knew very little about what was going on in the film, other than I knew right. Luke, Leia, you know, everyone from the first film.
I remember feeling really frustrated that this little weird thing was coming in and, like, you know, messing with stuff in Luke's camp.
That's the way you should. Exactly.
Throwing stuff around. Right. Well, and that's the brilliance, like, if you look at Yoda as a character, of his disguise, you know? He's acting like this weird little, like, half special, you know, dude that's like doesn't know what's going on.
But what Ben was doing when he was on Tatooine. He was mm-hmm. crazy Ben living up in the hills.
Yeah, no, strange old hermit or whatever.
That's right.
Right, Heidi?
Right, Ben.
Old Ben.
Those latex ears really vibrate. If you look at the latex ears of Yoda, that's a dead giveaway as to
if you know how latex moves. Not that I've had that much experience with latex, Tim. I'm not going to question yours.
But they have a built-in movement to them. There is a puppetry device that moves the ears as well. So they're having like mm-hmm. a little residual on top of that, a residual movement.
Oh, but I see.
They do move on their own.
They definitely do.
Well,
that's definitely part
They're articulated, but the natural, through him handling the puppet below it, is making the ears have a vibration that it shouldn't be happening for it to be a living animal, but...
Unless its skin just vibrates. Maybe it just has like a constant movement.
If you want to move towards, because anything's possible. Then
anything's
sure.
possible with an alien creature.
In this world. Okay. But that sort of took me out of the film when I was watching it for the first time.
You don't expect him to appear from the ceiling.
Right.
Well, that's great because it breaks up the space.
I love it though. I love it how Han turns around like he just wants to make sure 3PO didn't hear him, you know, say.
Right.
Like admit that he didn't know something already.
Here it comes.
Oh, music change.
Yep. Lovey music.
This is...
When the flute comes in, you know lovey-dovey time.
Mm-hmm. As opposed to the bass.
Or the tuba.
Hey, your worship. God, I love it.
You called her your highnessness at the very beginning.
That's the Star Wars version of how you do it.
That's right. Bon-chicka-wow-wow.
What makes it so great is like how hard like she tries to resist. It's just mm-hmm. ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. but I got that this is what appealed to me at 18 years old. I was just like, he's the man.
He is the man. He's so cool.
But that's the whole thing. I was at the right age to appreciate that. You like it? Because I don't like what it.
Are we glad that she's missing the cinnamon bun hairdo?
She's thrilled.
I'm sure she is. I like this do. I like every do she has.
And, of course, there's a bit of a continuity error. Her hand is behind his neck, but that's okay. 3PO, stop doing that. man, that is brutal.
Yeah, I love it how the guy disappears from the.
I also really don't like in the digitally remastered how they redo these hologram projections.
Oh, they did? Oh.
Yeah, they did.
No. Can't. No.
They look great like this.
Yeah, that's being shot off a video monitor.
What do they look like?
Totally is. Mm-hmm. Totally is.
They just look
more
they
real.
Actually, they Which look is less how real.
They did.
They look less real.
Obi-Wan in the first movie for the message in R2.
And then they just do a double exposure and they're there.
Yeah. So this is where we get to see the Emperor. Okay. So now we get another piece of the mythology.
Right. It's like, ooh, we get to see the Emperor.
We get to see the Emperor.
First time that's happened.
That's a damn
By the way,
big
here's a little
ship.
Here's a little trivia.
Yeah, it is.
Super Star Destroyer is roughly 8 kilometers in length.
Thank you.
Which is 8 times larger than a standard one.
So I like how he's bowing to the Emperor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
You know what kind of party
that's Alec Guinness's face. I'm sorry.
I could see that.
I mean,
I never thought of that
with
before,
someone else's.
Do you know it for sure?
No, but that's what I looked at it. The first thing I thought,
I mean,
it's not like
Alec
I went
Guinness.
Looking for it.
Right.
But I looked at his, like, that's Alec Guinness's face. It's not his eyes. I think they said it was monkey eyes or something like that.
Well, his eyes are oddly ringed. Like, see, they've got this, like,
it's someone else's eyes. That's the whole thing. But then I read somewhere it was like some old woman of some sort. I don't know. It looked like it was Clive Revel's voice, but it looked to me like it was Obi-Wan. It was like Alec Guinness. So that's all. I think it is.
I don't think so.
So now we're. You're just saying that. You just don't want to disagree with me. See?
Yep.
Right. But we're getting the plot. I mean, that was the main piece of the plot, is that the idea is they want to try and lure Luke in. You know, that is their whole plan.
Mm-hmm.
The size of this set is fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
He's in Hobbit Town.
Yeah.
Totally is.
Exactly.
So,
like,
folks out there, you've got to watch Pink Five Strikes Back to see how we did the Yoda set.
And for those listening who've never seen or heard of these before, Pink Five is a series of fan films. Pink Five is her call sign. It's a valley girl in the Star Wars movies who affects things behind the scenes in important ways that you never knew was her doing it.
Right.
So
it's kind of like Rosencrantz and Guildenstern in the Star Wars universe. Mm.
And Pink Five comes from a takeoff of Luke's call sign, which is Red Five.
And she's Pink
Five.
She's
Pink Five.
Yoda sounds like Miss Piggy.
Red. It is Miss Piggy.
Yeah. Amazing how that works.
You know that on the set of The Score, which was directed by Frank Oz with Marlon Brando. It was with Marlon Brando. I don't remember who else was in it. I think it was De Niro or something like that. Or I don't know who was who. And I think Edward Norton. Marlon Brando would just get under Frank Oz's nerves all the time by calling him Miss Piggy. And it just pissed him, Frank Oz, off. So I mean, I read this somewhere.
This is a big reveal that this is actually Yoda.
Dun, dun, dun. Wait a minute. What's with the voices?
Right? And this is the most maybe that Luke has heard Ben's voice since he passed away.
Or since he saw him
sitting.
Or once he saw him in Hoth in his fever dream.
Right.
See, this is great. I just love the, you know, what's great is they really can, you think Luke is like getting old enough, but he's still impetuous.
Yeah.
Well, we know this because he still leaves before he should finish his training. And we all know that this is just getting me. Let's get me started. That was the whole thing, is that Luke, you know, he's making the mistakes and he's going to fall into the trap, and he finds out about, spoiler alert, that Darth Vader is his father.
Mm-hmm.
And but then it's not just that, but that he could possibly be turning. And so that's why Jedi was so important, because then, you know, the expectation was that he's now going to the dark side of some sort. And it was just submerged. And I don't know quite how to do it, but obviously if I put some time to it and bother, I could, you know, I don't know. But that's where this film was leading to. And that was the promise. But that's what the film was saying. This is the direction it's going. Luke is on the wrong path. And even when he lost his hand, you're seeing his false hand. It's like, he's on a dangerous path, and he could actually go bad, just like his father. You know,
yeah,
his father
could.
Went bad,
mm-hmm.
Right? But then it just stopped there. Then we never saw the continuation of that. We never saw the fulfillment of what that problem was, and that I think that was part of what I was expecting for Return of the Jedi, and that didn't. It didn't work enough to answer that question.
But By the way, scariest puppet moment ever.
But that's
Yoda
kind of,
saying,
yeah.
"You will be."
Yeah, you will be. Oh, so many quotable lines for this. You know. I'm not scared. I always say, oh, you will be. Oh, yeah.
Be very afraid.
Yeah, that's right. You will be.
Now, I can see your point, Serge, about the whole Dark Jedi thing. And and I think as a younger person, I sort of wanted to be on the good guy side more.
Yeah.
When I got into college and started really kind of addressing the whole, like overall concepts of good and evil and everything,
mm-hmm.
I started going, you know, Darth Vader's kind of a badass. Maybe he's the coolest person here, you know? And I started like, and then one, a friend of mine who was really into Darth Vader.
It was disgusting, yeah.
And kind of started making me see Darth Vader in a little bit of a different light. And I don't know, connecting that to overall character arcs. It would have been more interesting to see Luke kind of delve more of the dark side.
And then
we kind of see that, because his introduction in Jedi, he's in a black robe and a black outfit.
Yeah.
He chokes two Gamorrean guards when he comes
into
the place.
I feel like there is a little bit of that journey in Jedi for mm-hmm. sure. I actually always felt that way. And
I'm not saying there wasn't, and I have to go back and watch it again. And obviously, we will do that after this.
And they have their whole, you know, like the whole interaction between Luke and Darth Vader in right. the end of Jedi.
Oh yeah, I mean the whole yeah. I'm not going to fight you. I'm going to fight right. you. The whole thing. Yeah. No, I mean I think there were. Parts
I think that's
of it
all
there.
Tied back into that. I think the difference between Luke and Anakin is Luke's friends and family and his connection to people.
True, and yeah, Anakin from the beginning. I
mean, that's what saved him.
Yeah. We learned for the prequels, you know, Anakin from the beginning did not have it. I don't know. There was something. Well, it was the midichlorians with Anakin. I don't know.
Oh Lord!
See, it's just downhill from there.
I'm taking deep breaths and not thinking about that word either.
I mean, come on. You know,
why did someone have to explain the Force?
Well, that's.
Yeah, because, you know, that was the mystical side of this very science-based,
because
futuristic
right.
science-based universe.
Because the whole time I was loving this series, the whole time I was really just sitting there like, I just can't wrap my mind around this idea of the Force. And I really wish someone would just explain this
right.
to me, you know?
Yeah,
that's
yeah
right.
let's just make the Force into science also, and then, you know, everything will be on an even playing field. That well, it's not mystical anymore. Won't that be great?
But the real problem with it is it gets into the content, what I call a continuity porn problem, is when you go back and try and fill in the continuity from before. And the problem is if you introduce the midichlorians, why did they never mention them here in this
because
trilogy?
They don't know about them because the Jedis are gone. That's why, Serge.
well, and don't get me started on the whole idea that there's the living force that has some kind of conscious will that it exerts on things
on its own,
that where it right where it can like conceive a child from
midichlorians. They were I love this, never saw this one coming, that was a space slug.
Oh yeah, right,
that
yeah. I don't think anyone did.
Nope.
Great Starfield.
I like how they
asteroids.
Just cut back to him and he goes back. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm going back home. All right.
And I love their wipes. They had the best optical wipes.
Oh yeah,
from one scene to the next, their transitions, very old school.
Now.
Very Buck Rogers, old serials type of wipes.
The story with the whale, Jonah and the whale.
Yes.
Duncan.
Jonah and the whale.
Bible.
Yes.
Jonah and the whale.
Yes.
What was that about?
You want the whole story? What are you trying to get?
I was trying to get, is there any symbolic, in other words, they were because they were inside of a slug. Is there any connection in there?
Not really, because the whole reason that Jonah ended up inside of the giant fish, whale's a misnomer, by the way, says giant fish.
I mean, it's a very big fish.
Yeah, like, you know, anyway, bigger than Jaws. But anyway, God told Jonah to go to a city and basically preach that they were in trouble, and he wouldn't do it, and he tried to run. So God sent a storm, and they pitched him over, and the whale took him, and it was sort of an object lesson to him to learn, hey, look, you can't get away from this that God wants you to do.
Okay, all right.
They were inside of a giant thing with teeth.
Okay.
That's parallel.
All right.
Possibly.
There we have it.
It has some sort of connection to the film and the book series Dune, you think? No.
Related.
Well, obviously.
Space
slug. You know, on Tatooine, you know, they did have a sandworm skeleton.
Yeah.
I guess they're referring to the imagery from Dune.
Is that a sandworm skeleton? I thought.
Totally. Oh, there was a sandworm.
It looked like a brachiosaurus.
Yeah, because they have those on Tatooine.
Well, I don't know. Are you from Tatooine?
Have you been Tatooine lately?
Have you lived in that galaxy?
There are no brachiosaurus in Tatooine.
There was historically.
Yeah.
A brachiosaurus actually happens to be my favorite dinosaur, so I'm gonna give it a little energy that maybe it existed there.
It definitely looked smaller than a worm skeleton.
Okay, the tree that he's going into.
Yes, back to the movie.
Let's go back to the movie. The tree that he's going into, obviously, it's pulling something from his psyche, right?
That's what I always took from it.
And. I mean, how? I just want to entertain the thought: does it something manifest itself physically? I love this. The whole thing. He takes his belt. And he says, "You will not need them." And you know, this is what's great about this film. He takes his belt anyway. He doesn't
right.
have faith in his powers, and already it's going to go bad.
Or he doesn't have faith in his trainer. Well, what is that? How is he getting so big in his head that he doesn't even trust what Yoda tells him?
But that's what's great, because this was the first clue that maybe he's not ready for all this stuff. And these are the clues. Mm-hmm. Like, he's going mm-hmm. to go down the dark path, and then someone else is going to have to retrieve him, like his brother or, you know, his whatever his relative is. I really always believed that Leia should have had a bigger role in Jedi and should have, you know, come out and helped to Luke. You know, we found out who the other was, and that person would have participated.
That would have been cool.
That was another thing I had at this point. Jedi expected the other to participate fully, as opposed to, oh, we just find out who it is, and they do nothing.
Right.
That was another big disappointment.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. But see, to me, that's in my imagination in the future. Like, I feel like, okay, so I'm down. Seven, eight, nine. Right, that's just like, that's the clues that they gave us so we could figure out what we think happens next.
Well, and in the Expanded Universe books, they actually go into a lot of that.
Right, and just in waiting the 3 years, that's what you're expecting to happen next. You said, this is what you set up for us? Great. Mm. It's going to pay off. Mm-hmm. And
so how much out of 100% were you disappointed with Jedi? 60% of it you're disappointed?
I'd say about 40%. I wanted to point out the architecture here.
Yep.
The architecture is similar to the architecture at the end when he and Darth Vader are fighting. It's those same angles in that thing that's coming out there.
That is interesting.
Yeah, it's like a premonition.
Yeah, it's a premonition. It's a good. It's a plant of some sort. I mean, obviously, this is not really Darth Vader.
Wow, look at that debris.
And he draws first. There's all these little things. He draws first. Darth Vader draws second.
Well, realize that Luke has not seen Darth Vader or interacted with him in any way since he saw him kill Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Right.
All he's been thinking about Darth all up to this time is, boy, I wish I could take out Darth Vader.
Right. And he cuts his head off, which, of course, we address in Pink Five Strikes Back.
this scared the crap out of me when I was a kid.
And how the lightsaber just passes across his face. Mm-hmm. This is a great sequence, and he sees his own face. And we were like, what the hell does that mean? Which, of course, is, you know, you're not prepared. You could become evil. Little did we suspect.
Right. It has so much more meaning. But, yeah.
It
definitely has its own meaning right now, even in the context of not having the end of this film or Return of the Jedi.
Exactly. Already, it was laden already with just the fact that you are going down the wrong path.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You are letting yourself get sucked in by your anger and your fear.
Yep.
Which was really potent, actually.
I was also kind of disappointed. I know they address it again in the Expanded Universe books, but that they didn't, in this movie at least, explain a little bit more about what that cave was about. Why is it powerful with the dark side?
Is that what
Who
he said?
Who was there? Why is there architecture in the middle of this apparent swamp planet?
Was it powerful with the dark side, or was it just powerful with the Force?
No, the dark side.
Oh, is that what Yoda
strong
said?
In the dark side of the Force is what Yoda said. The Expanded Universe has a dark Jedi living on that planet like centuries before and basically leaving a residue.
Oh, I see.
I gotcha. Okay.
That makes sense.
All right. Oh, really? I thought it was just
it was just like a test cave, yeah.
Bringing out Luke's case as far as where he could be going.
Right.
That's what I always thought, yeah.
And that concept rings a bell. There was some other movie that had something. No, wait. No, that's a book series I'm reading. Never mind. But yeah, I always thought that too, but I definitely read in some Expanded Universe stuff it was different.
I love that the hyperdrive still doesn't work.
Yeah, right? It's great.
It's not fair.
It's not fair.
It's not fair.
I remember the audience reaction.
It's not my fault.
To that.
And also, the girl is so disappointed.
Entire auditorium.
The girl is so disappointed. The guy, he's not making the thing work. He's like, I've got to make this work.
Right. But how did the audience react to him?
Oh, laugh.
They were just laughed. All emotionally invested, and everyone's just yelling at the screen. Yeah. Oh, come on. Oh, come on. So nice. By the time you have the payoff, the place went ballistic.
I love this music moment right here where he turns around.
Well, but I loved also that he was calculating the odds, which we know from, like, you know, Spock, and she says, shut up.
Right.
Oh, and this was a great move. Didn't even suspect this, but this is, like, good writing. It's like, well, what do you do? This is like a Firefly move, actually.
Totally.
Before there's a Firefly
because
move.
Because they use cleverness instead of brute force.
That's
right. Because that's all they had.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's right.
Sort of like when you don't have as big a budget for your movie as you'd like, and you have to work within limitations.
Yeah.
That's right. So now this is the Admiral. So this is what you're remembering.
Yeah, see, doesn't he look a lot like Admiral?
He does.
Is actually the captain of a completely different ship. Mm. And that pit that they showed is on a different Star Destroyer. Where they were showing the bounty hunters in the pit was on the Super Star Destroyer.
Got it.
This is a completely different one, not even near the Super Star Destroyer. They got to go meet them somewhere for him to go apologize.
Right. Is that a, who knows, Taro? I think that's a a character from the tarot cards.
Which?
Hanging upside down.
But, oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
I think.
Blip, 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 beep, blop.
He's like, ooh, yeah. Look.
Thanks for narrating the subtitles. That's copyrighted, you know.
Oh.
Thanks a lot, Tim. Now I have to bleep you out.
That's some good special effects.
This is a great sequence mm-hmm. right
oh,
here.
Yeah. Yeah, I really
this is a Dagobah, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And this really, I mean, once again, you know, it's about how teaching, you know, you life, it's all about teaching you life lessons and that mm-hmm. kind of thing. Obviously, he's getting his tutelage.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he thinks that this is impossible. I mean, he knows there's the force, and somehow he's still got this thing in his mind. He's very material. It can't be done. Mm-hmm. I just can't do it.
Mm-hmm. I remember, though, thinking about this movie, I really like was seeing Yoda from Luke's perspective
oh, yeah.
right up until this, where Yoda basically shows him how powerful he is.
Well,
right. Yeah.
And that he is in fact someone to be respected.
And this is the first time in the series so far that you've really been able to get an idea of how powerful a Jedi could be.
Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. Because you haven't really seen much.
Right.
You've seen lightsabers. You've seen a guy choking somebody. You've seen right. Luke move some stuff.
But now you, and actually Luke is kind of moving slow. Now, I want to, actually, I'm going to have to refer to the prequels here. I'm sorry, I just want to bring something up. In the prequels, they mention the whole thing about taking Anakin on, but that he wasn't, the whole thing is that he was too old, and that taking right. someone on too old was a risk. Excuse me, Luke
right.
is like 18 or 19 years old here, at least, if not 20.
But he's the last.
So they have to train him, and there's no danger of him taking him on.
Well, there is danger. Obviously, there's danger. I mean, yeah. they've been alluding to it this entire movie and the predecessor.
Mm-hmm.
They've been alluding. I mean, that's what we've been talking about, too, the danger of Luke going to the dark side and how, you know, Yoda's mentioned it.
Or am I mixing up movies? Were they talking about age here? Or am I thinking of prequels?
No, but they do talk in these films about the potential of him going to the dark side.
Right.
So maybe that age could be part of the concern. I mean, okay. I'm not trying to like make sense of that, but I'm probably yeah. sure that that's where it comes from.
Yeah, I was just I remembered something from the prequels where they had talked about.
Yeah, they do talk about that.
Okay.
Yeah,
right.
they do.
That was more the thing I was trying to remember.
They do when they bring Anakin in to be observed by the Council of Jedi. That's when they're like, you know,
and Phantom Menace.
And right, and they were just saying he's already too old.
He was like you 10 see the, or something like that, yeah.
Well, in the movie he was supposed to be like supposedly 7 or 8, but yeah. they actually show kids training with Yoda in the third film at least.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
were like 3 or 4.
Right, I remember itty that. Bitty. Yeah.
Well, I makes me curious, well, what is the actual process? Maybe that's in the expanded universe too, but it seems like people would have to bring their almost infant kids and be like, "Oh, can you test my kid and see if he's a Jedi?" Or there'd have
maybe
to be
they
some
just
kind of
know.
Process for
maybe
that.
They just like, I mean, in like a bigger
like
council, like
the
Dalai Lama, you know, like there's just
it's the
they know that there's like the children that they go to search. And they check.
No, you well, exactly that exactly yeah. they would find them.
There'd have to be a way of going and checking
and to I
keep
and
their
totally
numbers up.
Yeah, you know? I mean that's the okay. whole thing is
fantastic, hmm. fantastic puppeteering right here where you are getting this like this. You can see the strain in the puppet of how much effort he's putting into raising, you know, this spaceship. It's amazing.
You know, I got to say, for a film shot in 1980, this does not look like a film shot in 1980.
No.
Well, shot actually in 78, 79.
So much practical stuff. I mean, there's one green screen shot here in a second, but...
But the way yeah, the way usually well the way the film stock is and the way it's shot, it's not for... By all means, Tim, contradict me. It's not overtly dating itself,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got a friend, a guy who has a small little boy, and they wanted to enroll him in like this almost dance karate class or something, and it was very uncool, and the boy just, they knew the boy wouldn't take to it, so he went to it for a year, and the reason, because they called it Jedi training class.
There you
they
go.
They told him it was Jedi training.
Oh,
and
they got
the kid
to go
never
a whole year
knew
just
otherwise, that. And the kid always went off to Jedi training.
Wow.
Yep.
And the guys at the training class are always like, he's doing well, but he keeps asking about lightsabers.
Why does this kid keep on using the force? He keeps on moving things. And I like this. I don't believe it. He says, I don't believe it. And what was he saying? That's why you fail.
Yep. Yeah. Because you don't believe, well, that's his whole lesson here.
And it's such an easy lesson, but there had never been a movie that had stated this. Maybe The Karate Kid which I think was actually after this. But you know, the same kind of principle. I like this apology accepted.
This is the moment, by the way, where it gets confusing about the whole rank thing.
Right. I agree. I agree.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, accepted.
Everyone laughed. Nice. Unfortunately, how do you laugh at death?
Which confused me a little bit is like these guys pick him up and he almost helps them take him away. See that? He almost helps them get him up.
Yeah.
What are those on their chest? Are they buttons?
Symbols of rank.
So they're not buttons to be pushed.
No.
Okay.
No, I thought those were medals. I guess you're right. They are ranked.
They are. Yeah.
It's like you got two rank things. You got little.
Yeah.
Things
you got blue and you got red at different levels. And some of them.
Then you have the other two the double bars.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them. Now here's the reveal. There's a Millennium Falcon.
Love it.
And also size wise, you're going, wow, there's a big ship. It's on.
It's exactly. That is huge.
Good perspective.
Yeah, and they're just being quiet, and they're waiting until the space garbage is dumped.
By the way, I love how the subtitles put up Chewie talking.
Gah.
Capital G-A-H-H-H exclamation point.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with blip, blip, bleep, blop, blop.
And right. I like here how they just turn him off.
Yeah, in other words, that's the first time anyone's done that.
Exactly. They just expand on everything that we've known. Mm-hmm. And
casually. Like it's just part of the universe. You just happen to not see it before.
Exactly. Yeah. And the great thing about this sequel, it didn't reuse anything from the previous sequel to make it work. It used everything and then created on top of it, but didn't create it so much on top of it that it was so alien from what the first one was. This is probably the greatest. Okay, here's the question I'm going to pose. What's the greatest sequel to a film? This or Godfather Part 2? Or are they just different?
I'm out of this discussion because I don't remember Godfather 2 enough to comment.
Yeah, okay. All right. Tim, Heidi.
But I'm going to go with this because it's science fiction.
You can mention another one. I think those are the two best examples.
On what parameters? I mean, to me, science fiction, I think the best sequels have been Aliens to Alien.
Okay. Very good. Yep. Very good.
Agreed.
For expansion upon a theme.
What about as opposed to this from Star Wars?
But I would say this is better, though, because on a personal level, I prefer Alien to Aliens. And then out of these films, I think this is the finest of all the Star Wars films. Mm. So to be a sequel and to outshine any other installment, I don't know. I think it's pretty rare.
It is. Right. A lot of people, Terminator 2 compared to Terminator.
But I still like Terminator better.
Oh, Terminator is a good film, but Terminator 2 had a lot more money and they did it.
Mm-hmm. I'm just talking about expanding on a theme and carrying it, you know.
Yeah. So, okay.
But truly, Empire Strikes Back, he wrote multiple stories, Lucas says. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't an isolated case just for Star Wars. Alien was not supposed to have a sequel.
Right.
You know, so you have to judge it by that as well.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But one thing was never designed for it. Star Wars was designed with a future story of where things happened.
Right. With many stories. Yeah. I mean,
and was The Godfather planned to have a sequel? Or was it just a
movie unto itself when it first came out? I think, and I read the book a long time ago, so I think they didn't use some parts of the book that they used as part of the second film and then expanded from there, and that, you know, Coppola wrote with Mario Puzo. But definitely a different flavor than, I mean, this is a, you know, night and day type of film from Godfather 2.
Exactly, yeah. But as far as the efficacy of a sequel versus the first movie.
Maybe it's just different. I don't know.
Speaking of The City in the Clouds, as they were just talking about in the film,
we weren't.
We weren't. So if you're just listening to us, yeah.
Backtrack.
Sorry.
Which one of us was talking about?
But I think that that's something so dynamic that this film does is the way that it takes us to several different real locations. Worlds. You know, you get like, you start out with the tundra, you know, you're in the jungle, we're going to be in the clouds. It's just, it's very fantastic.
They cover their bases.
Right. And, you get a little bit of everything.
And in space.
And in space.
Yes. Gotta have some stars there.
You have a potpourri of environments.
Right.
I like this. I don't know. I don't have a landing permit.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I remember Lucas saying, as far as special edition, his biggest problem was the city in the clouds. He wanted to redo with a lot of CG. He was not happy with how this turned out.
I can understand like being able to see through the windows and whatever. I mean, that's neat, but it's not so necessary.
This was fun. Yeah.
That
I thought Bespin
was
great.
Yeah, it doesn't.
I love the city in the clouds. This is actually one of I don't know. I as far as any sci-fi movie I watched in my lifetime, I think the idea of the city in the clouds is one of my favorite concepts.
Right.
By the way, here's a fun little fun fact. Expanded universe. The next thing that Lando does is he builds a city that walks on hundreds of AT-AT legs on this planet where you always have to be on the dark side of the planet because the sun is too hot on the light side.
So the city's
constantly moving.
What a great idea.
Isn't that fun?
What a great idea. And I would leave it up to Lando Calrissian to come up with such a wonderful concept.
There you go.
Best fictional name ever.
it's pretty fly.
Ever.
It's pretty hot. It's pretty hot.
I like the Art Deco design. I see she says, I don't like this. And she's right. And you know why she's right?
Female instinct.
Because she's a Jedi.
Women's intuition.
Oh.
Good point.
Spoiler alert. She's a Jedi.
Well, women's intuition / Jedi intuition, very
Jedi.
Close concepts. I'm just saying.
Pretty potent combination.
See?
Right?
See? I like how he just says to him, it's right, keep your eyes open. He says, yeah, it's okay, keep your eyes open.
Gah.
It's just great. Hey. Yeah, I'm glad we have, I wish we had the Universal Translator so we could understand what
it's a beautiful shot.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Oh, everything on
the whole city.
Oh, look at that lighting. And that's all, it's all lights. And I guess they used a color temperature, daylight color temperature for that, to get that look. Right, Tim?
Yeah, the banks of light there, and they also diffused it, and that's a Shamira. That's like tons of bank of light off to the side. Mm-hmm.
See, she already knows something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now I'm going to ask a question to be answered when it comes up. Okay, when 3PO goes walking past the door, he hears a weird sound. He says, oh, it's you, blah, 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 and then he walks in, and then he gets shot to pieces.
Who's you?
Who's you?
Well, he goes into the door first because he hears what it
sounds like
R2-D2.
Right. But then...
I think it's Lando.
But then he recognizes, like, who are you? Yeah, okay.
We'll
see when we get
there.
All right, I want to plant the question right now. It's like, hey, come on, buddy.
Oh, this is great, too, though. Just the catalyst of Lando being there makes Han suddenly, like, basically act possessive of Leia.
It's fantastic.
But Leia goes with it.
It's what she wants in a little way.
By the way,
she's completely suspect of him.
Oh, she's like right? Totally like there's something wrong here.
She's accepting a buffer.
Full set. I like this set.
Oh yeah.
I always like the Cloud City sets, even without any special editions. Or
yeah,
whatever.
I do.
They made it way too busy. The stuff that's happening outside the windows, the special edition.
But that's just like in Star Wars when they came into Mos Eisley, they had this and that, and a Tauntaun and blah blah blah. It's like you don't need the extra stuff.
But I like the simplicity of it. This is. Even George Lucas has said this. This is supposed to be like the Dark Ages for these people.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Because it's the time after the Old Republic where it was like...
Okay.
Wait.
Right.
Now here it is. Okay. So now Lando just walked by. He hears an R2 unit. That sounds like an R2 unit in there.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder if... Hello? He's just like, where's he going? And we hear, who are you? Oh, he says, oh, I'm terribly sorry.
Well, okay. Clearly those were stormtroopers.
So there's no, it's
there.
You?
So who said, who are you? Like that
stormtrooper.
Voice.
Yeah.
Maybe it could be Boba Fett.
You know what? I think it's a bounty hunter. Okay.
Could be Boba Fett. If it's
Howard
Boba
the
Fett
Duck.
Talking. If Howard the Duck was here, that would be awesome.
That would be cool.
If
Howard the Duck was on Dagobah instead of Yoda.
I just finished watching that movie again.
I love Howard the Duck.
It was great. Actually, I really enjoyed the characterization of the duck, honestly, and the voice work was good.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
I liked it.
And the puppetry is great.
Have you ever read the comic?
No, I've never read the comic, but I mean, I've seen it. I know what it's like.
Oh,
it's like
you have to read the comic. The comic is like... I used to hate Howard the Duck. I can now accept it, but I was a fan of the comic.
Had Alec
Serious
Guinness
fan.
Done anything before the Star Wars movies?
No.
Or was he just Obi-Wan?
No. He started movies late in his career.
So
like George Bernard Shaw, and then this was what he did, and then I think he did a few more things, and then he passed away.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's cool that he had Obi-Wan to put him on the map.
You know, it's interesting.
Oh, for sure.
Right. It's interesting that he's so much more material here than he was on Dagobah.
Yeah.
See, here's...
That's rough.
By the way, listening audience, Tim is being completely facetious. Alec Guinness was a huge star before this.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a step down for him to do something like this.
But this is the one and most thing he's known for.
Exactly.
Ironically. But, I mean, here's the big thing. They're saying you have to wait. You have to be fully trained. And if you go too quickly, you can follow down, you know, become an agent of evil. And it's like, no, Luke, you can't. And he's going against them, which is what the great tension was watching this.
Yeah.
With no knowledge of Return of the Jedi whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and here he's choosing his path. And it's great. It's great darkness. He says, I know this is a bad route, but I have to, you know, help my friends.
But at the end of the day, he's doing what they want him to do, which is to trust himself.
Luke really grows up in this movie.
Oh. Yeah, a lot.
From the whiny Tatooine kid, to this, it's
Uncle
like...
Uncle Owen!
Absolutely about
it. See, they say don't give in to hate. They're like giving him the last minute things. You know?
You know what I always wondered, and still wonder? Obviously, between Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back, Luke learned how to fight with a lightsaber. Because he holds his own with Darth Vader.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
He learned some stuff. He, of course, learned from Yoda, but there's no way just being with Yoda that
long. Here's one of the great movie moments ever. Mm-hmm. No, there is another. This freaked us all out in the theater, right, Tim?
Right.
This is just like, what?
Yeah, and there was never any payoff.
That massive lighting
the
effect.
The red light at the same time.
Yeah,
and it was,
it's dramatic as hell.
Yeah.
You're like... Can this get more awesome?
Carrots are being dangled in front of your
face. Exactly, you're an hour and a half in. Yep. You're like, can this... Holy crap.
Mm-hmm.
Luke's on his way to, like, doom, and there's another Jedi. So everyone's like, who is it?
See, it's just blue through that skylight. In the special edition, I think they had tons of stuff.
Yeah.
It's
lovely like that.
That's just a blue,
blue it's
screen
unnecessary.
Behind there.
Yeah.
It's really unnecessary adding anything.
You know, I think this is the same set, you know, the set where they put him in when they're trying to drive Chewbacca crazy with a sound. It looks like it's
very
the same
possible.
Set, so they probably just redressed the whole thing.
Redressed, lit it different, yeah.
Yeah.
I can see that.
He looks good in there, and so does she. I love that lighting.
Yeah.
They look very nice.
Probably my favorite Princess Leia hairstyle, by the way.
Yeah, I like that Princess Leia hairstyle. I was going to say that, but I didn't want to be the girl, so thanks for starting that out.
Are you calling me the girl?
Heidi, you are the girl, so you can be the girl. It's okay.
It's reminiscent.
The camera crew is in the reflection of that helmet.
Oh, yeah.
People, if you want to, you'd lose sync if you did it. But
go back and look for it later.
Look and you'll see the camera crew.
Oh.
By the way, note, next to the door there is IG-88, who was one of the bounty hunters that was in the room of bounty hunters earlier.
Oh, okay, that's right.
Or at least he's the same model of bounty droid. Or
see, Chewbacca's saying Gah.
Droid.
Gah. Gah.
Yes, thanks for interrupting my reference
Chewbacca
to say Gah.
Chewbacca and Nell have a lot in common.
Yes, right?
Like they're like, he is so smooth. Han is just like, oh, man.
He's going to throw up
man,
his
he
hand.
He always had better moves than me. Dang it.
But he's got a cape, so...
And I like how he just notices...
Yes, that's
Incredibles, he's damned.
Oh, yeah,
by the Incredibles rule.
You know, if you have a cape, you're a bad person in this movie.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Darth that's Vader, true. Lando.
Good point.
Mm-hmm. And there's the Ugnaughts. What a great
name.
Fisher
Warwick Davis is in there somewhere.
Carrie Fisher's really short.
She's
oh
tiny,
God.
Yeah.
Yeah, she is. Well, Harrison Ford, he's not quite 6 feet, is he? Isn't he
no,
like, more like
he's
a 5'10
pretty
or a 5'10?
No,
I thought he was
like
a tall.
Six, he's like a
6'1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought he was a tall.
A
tall. You're either a short or a tall.
He's a short or a tall. He could be a medium.
Right. And by the way, in case you thought Darth Vader couldn't get any more badass.
See, that was a really nice cut. He went to Chewbacca and he's like looking behind him. And this, of course, is like, what?
Yeah, never saw that coming.
Never saw it coming, yeah.
And then finally, you get that big payoff because you get to see a little bit more of the Force in action. Mm-hmm.
And I love it that it's like so many people, I'm sure, by now were like, well, you have never seen anybody block a blaster bolt with a lightsaber, so you don't know that can even happen.
Right.
And you go, everyone's like, why didn't somebody just shoot Darth Vader? I mean, what's the problem? You could probably get a shot off before he chokes you. Well, that's why.
Yeah, because he goes,
here you go. He can block them with his hands.
That's right.
Just saying.
There you go.
There you go.
Chewbacca says, gah.
Chewbacca say, gah.
And the door closes. And, you know, like, this is just getting dark.
Yep.
Dark. Mm-hmm. Dark.
Luke was right. And, oh, my gosh. He's like, hurry up, Luke. Hurry.
See, that's what's great about this movie is that more so than, I don't know, any other movie that had built up our sympathies for characters, it let us make us feel like they were winning and then let them lose, but we could still stay with it as opposed to mm-hmm. checking out.
Right.
And here we thought they were winning, and now they're losing again, but we're still, we don't feel like all is lost. But I can't even think of another film that has ever made me feel like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wait, we're about to get the answer to our question from earlier, by the way. I totally forgot about this. It was stormtroopers in that passageway.
It was stormtroopers?
Because he accesses C-3PO's subconscious memory when he's turning him back on, and he says, oh, no, stormtroopers here.
Well,
we're
that stormtrooper had a weird voice
then.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, I'll definitely give you that.
Rah.
Definitely sound a lot meaner than your average stormtrooper.
Yeah, the stormtroopers from Star Wars had, you know, nice even voices, and from the prequels had basically Australian accents.
Right.
Oh,
maybe
sorry.
C-3PO caught them doing something they shouldn't have been. In that side.
Playing
passage.
Cards.
Who are you?
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Nice gag of putting his head backwards.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, well, let's I could see the story meeting. Oh, let's have it backwards. Mm-hmm.
And here, this takes it to another level of darkness right here. Mm. Torture. Right?
Yeah.
They're about to torture Han Solo. No questions, no nothing, just here you go.
Yeah, with some kind of weird-looking contraption.
That you have no idea how it's going to work.
Right? That sparks and stuff.
Right.
Yeah, that's your fault, Lando Calrissian.
Yeah. Is that the Wilhelm? Mm-hmm. That's not the Wilhelm.
No. I think that's a Harrison Ford original. By the way, I just want to say, you know you're rich when you can afford a robot copy of Jean-Luc Picard to follow you around and do stuff for you.
Oh, Jean-Luc is much more attractive than that guy.
Okay.
It's like your dad saying, what kind of punishment do you think that you deserve?
None.
Yeah, zero. Thank you.
What did you think, Lando?
Mm-hmm.
Never deal with the bad guys.
You know what,
the bad guys will betray you.
Just to be fair, he didn't really have a choice, did he?
Well, that's true. Well, then he should just say...
too down on
then he, then he should just be realistic that there were no deals to be made, and he's just got to try and be more clever than the bad guys. Mm-hmm.
I will say I remember in watching this in the theater, first day when it came out, it was palpable. Between Luke and Vader at the end.
Oh, sure.
You could cut the tension in that theater with a knife.
Yep.
People were just so engrossed, totally, after all this foundation of a film that came before it, leading up to it. This has a great payoff for the end, for all the threads, how they come together, and where it's being brought. But everyone just was shocked at how suddenly it was cut off.
Oh, yeah.
And the movie ended, and everyone's hanging.
Yeah.
They were really pissed off.
She changed wardrobe.
No, yeah. I was just going to say, I always wondered what they did to her that ended with her changing clothes and them just kind of casually tossing her in the cell and, you know.
Right.
I don't
want to know.
Right?
So is he Han Solo or Han Solo? She called him Han.
It kind of switches here and there.
I go with Han, because I'm German.
It's Han. It is Han, yeah.
It's interesting she said Han.
Ooh, he got the punch in. Hey, don't go punching his, hitting his buddy. Right.
You know, the other side of this that sometimes we don't think about that maybe is communicated better with the additions in the special edition was Lando's actually responsible for the lives of thousands of people in this city.
Right.
Okay.
And even though he does shady deals here and there, he's still the guy in charge. And he's got to make good decisions for
everybody. Everybody knows that.
Well, I mean, we know when the Empire moves in. I mean, you know, the illusion is very clear. This is like, you know, the Nazis, and, you know, they've taken over, and they're basically will kill you if you don't want, if you don't do what they want.
He's kind of like Meep stuck in Anne Frank diary. You know, Meep, who took care of the Franks when they lived in, but Meep never gave them up. So that's not really true.
Because they never knew they were there, and when they did, that's when they found them. So that's the whole thing.
I love this set, by the way.
Oh, this set is amazing.
It embodies such a feeling of menace.
The lighting, that you got the blue, and you got the red. And what is
the
red? What is that?
The smoke.
That blue, it looks like a corridor, but it's not. It's like a weird piece of architecture. It makes it look like it's some kind of abstract corridor, but it's not.
It almost seems like they mean it to look like a real corridor, but it kind of doesn't work, so it just looks like a weird like portal into Munchkin Land or something.
I love the music
here.
That's
what I thought
it was. It's just so hopeful.
Portal into Munchkin Land.
Of course, we are now coming up to the most famous, the most famous line in movie history, as far as I'm concerned.
Maybe one of those most famous romantic moments.
I think it's all.
Yeah.
Oh, you know that I got it, and then I've got to re-remember about In Order. That was what sold me on Han. I mean, obviously, I was sold on Han, but that's what really sold me on Han.
Gosh, I'm surprised it took two almost complete movies for you to be sold on Han.
Sold completely. No,
Sarah's a tough sell.
At the beginning of this movie, I was pretty sold, but that sealed the deal. His line, his last line in this movie. It is a great love story.
It is a great.
It is really.
Well, and that was improv, you know. He just made that up.
Yeah, because they had other stuff for him.
Because I love you. I love you. And he said, I love you,
and it
too.
It just wasn't working.
Like, no.
Because it wasn't
working on set. Yeah.
Right. I love you. I know. Actually, I think that's like it looks like a corridor like they had in the whatever when they were in Star Wars on the Death Star, you know, when they kind of went on the prison level.
You know, another good music cue.
This is awesome. Some heavy crap. There we go.
Aww.
And the sudden camera switch.
That's probably one of the greatest movie kisses ever.
Of all time, yeah.
It is, seriously. I ain't kidding. He said, how old are you?
Oh man.
Yep.
It's just like, wow.
If he wasn't the badass, you know, bad boy before.
He was. Yeah.
But this is a testament really to great directing, because it was Irvin Kershner who said, you know what, these lines aren't working. Just say whatever comes to mind.
Yeah.
Be Han Solo.
Well, however they came to it. I mean, obviously there was a script and they...
Well, I remember hearing that in a documentary.
Oh, that's how it happened. See, now that's interesting.
That's a great shot, too.
It's interesting that they set that up. He says, I can't see, so basically he has to turn around so 3PO can see.
I love that shot of Darth Vader. That's probably one of the most classic, like, you know, the smoke comes away to reveal Darth Vader looking up.
Yeah.
Great.
And of course, the sound work in this with all... The sound actually here with that pulling up.
Oh my gosh. The first time I saw this, I cried.
It was horrific.
I was just crying.
Here is Han, who had been made into this big hero, and he's, once again, you're in disbelief. It's like, wait a minute.
Yeah, people didn't think
that worked just
hero?
Now.
People didn't think they'd go this far.
This,
I remember that.
This is pretty far. It's like, what the hell?
Yeah,
and then, of
and
course,
this
they do.
This is disturbing.
And that thud, I mean, we didn't really get it. But the
trying
theory,
to wrap
it was
their mind
just,
around the process of carbon freeze and
that thud was just such a deep, beautifully rendered
molding
thud.
Of that in his hands and everything. I mean,
now that's something you want to have in your living room.
Yeah,
it'd be cool to have that
as your
display.
Coffee table desk. There is a guy who
we did borrow his Han in carbonite from that we used to Return of the Jedi. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he lives in somewhere in Southern California.
They're floating around.
Yeah, there's a few of them.
I'm sure.
Oh yeah.
No pun intended with the floating part.
Nyak, nyak, nyak. Yeah, see to it. Uh-oh.
You're going to believe and trust Darth Vader on any level?
On.
The fact is that he seems authentically surprised is what's shocking to me.
You see, he does this whole thing where he reaches for his neck. I'm like, huh? Did you really have to do that unless he was choking you?
You know what, though? I think Lando is used to dealing with shady people and bad people that have power, but Darth Vader doesn't make deals.
Right.
And that's what he doesn't get, is just that Darth Vader is in charge, period, and there is no deal.
Well, I mean, that
most people you can negotiate with money or favors or something, and Lando's clearly a powerful man. He can do stuff for people.
Right.
Nothing for Darth Vader, but...
Well, so now we're coming... This is essentially, I would say now, that was the end of the second act. I'd say this is the third act.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, but this is with the final act where it's Luke is basically going to confront.
Mm-hmm. I want to make a weapons comment here real quick.
Yes, sir.
This also indicates his sort of transition from just a guy who's an adventurer who is trying to do the best he can, where he's always got the blaster out. That's his first instinct always, to the Jedi, where he pulls the lightsaber first.
Right.
Which is in Return of the Jedi.
Right.
You know, he didn't have the lightsaber with him in that first scene.
See, that's
but then
that's,
you know,
again,
for
like,
the rest,
I gotta
no blaster.
Just do a shout out for Return of the Jedi, though, you know, like
mm.
That opening scene of Return of the Jedi is amazing, when he just like shows up out of nowhere and he's suddenly a Jedi and he's just...
Yeah.
I don't know.
There was a lot of payoff to me for that.
Me
except
too.
Except for the part that he didn't have a lightsaber in that part.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, the way they revealed it later was really cool.
Right. But even just like when he comes up and he uses, you know, the Jedi mind trick to let himself into Jabba. Mm-hmm. And like, I don't know. It's just so cool.
I'm not... Okay. I'm just telling you, back then, leading up to it, with the 3 years anticipation, I got something different than what I expected. That's all.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
And then there were the Ewoks.
Oh, I just really love those little Ewoks.
Oh,
all
right.
That made your point much more effectively than when you just stated it normally before.
Yeah, I got it now. So now he's in the arena.
Notice he actually thinks about his blaster for a second and puts it away.
Yeah, he's just like,
here's the transition.
I know
different
what
game
the
now.
Deal
yep.
is. Look at that. This is really yes.
That
this
shot.
You are not a Jedi
wow.
yet. That's yeah. well, another classic line.
Mm-hmm. I also like that their lightsabers come out at different speeds.
Yeah,
it's almost like Luke's right. in a hurry and Darth Vader's just like whatever.
Right. And who pulls? Yeah, Luke once again. Mm-hmm. He pulls out first, which was not good.
So his is an off-white. Luke is
blue.
So you have blue and red in the set.
Yes. Yep.
And you have blue and red sabers.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Primary colors. Mm-hmm. What?
Good point. And notice that all the blue in the set is higher than the red.
Yeah.
It's almost like a heaven and hell kind of thing, really. Yeah. You get metaphorical about it.
And let's just notice there's a ton of smoke being blown out there.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, it is smoke.
Which always makes things seem more ethereal.
And it hides a lot of things.
Yes.
And that's why you shoot when it's dark and smokes. You can hide a lot of things and hide parts of sets
and
shoot in silhouette.
I got to say,
and
too.
This is cool. I love this, yes.
Yeah, this is a great moment. The lightsaber, the fighting technique is actually pretty good in this. Like, it's very traditional swashbuckling related to fencing, somewhat kendo kind of thing.
Right.
It's not as fast or like kung fu kind of stuff like they do in the prequels, but it's effective. It seems real.
Well, that's
it
the
really
thing.
Seems
in the prequels,
real.
I hate to say it, it's too quick.
Yeah, it's too. It's too quick.
Thank you. Wow. I mean,
having a background in martial arts, I can follow what they're doing in the prequels, but it definitely, definitely feels choreographed. Definitely feels choreographed.
Right, whereas this stuff...
Well, and even
you know
the camera motion's too fast around it. I mean, it's a combination of both, you know? Mm-hmm.
I can go with that.
This was a nice gag. Choking Billy Dee. I'm sorry, Lando.
Calrissian.
It's like, let the Wookiee win.
We didn't actually see Chewie rough anybody up in the first film, did we?
No.
He didn't actually lay hands on anybody.
No,
but, you know, obviously Han said let the Wookiee win. So.
Right, right. So there was the threat of violence, but you never saw it. And then we just saw him throw stormtroopers around, so that's cool. But those might be the first, like, direct one where he's just like...
Mm-hmm. I think he was angry at him.
Sure.
He's a gentle giant.
Yeah.
That he is.
But I just think it's cool when the payoff comes for the suggesting that he has all this strength and whatever, you know.
Good old Peter Mayhew. Oh, this is great. I love the expression on her face.
Mm-hmm.
And she's really well lit. And the music cue is great. That's great.
Her boots had little heels on them. Ridiculous.
You're kidding. Nice. Oh, no. That was a great cut going into there.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it was with a pan, right into with the sound. It's really good.
Uh-oh.
Yep. Nice jump, Darth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was pretty menacing.
Yeah. Because it wasn't even like he jumped like it was an effort. It was almost like
he just like floated down like a bird.
And control
yeah.
his motion
like
through the
down.
Air.
Down.
All right. I'm going to cop to something right now. I will. This is better than Star Wars.
The first one?
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
The first one that counts.
It was the first one I saw, but I mean, I've seen it recently, and I'm seeing this, and I'm like, mm-hmm. yeah, this one. The first one is definitely great, but this is even greater. It is.
Yes.
The involvement and emotional
yep.
payoffs in this.
Yes. Yeah.
I definitely did not cry the first time I saw Star Wars, but I cried when I saw this movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's not a whole lot to cry about in the first one.
No.
No. No, this one leaves you in a... There's a lot to...
Oh, yeah. There are several very intense moments.
This one's heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Because, spoiler alert, Darth Vader is his father.
I had a...
Just in case you didn't know.
Spoiler alert, everyone's related to each other. That's pretty much what it boils down to is this incestuous universe.
Hey, spoiler alert, C-3PO was Darth Vader's toy way back when.
And
Darth Vader knew R2 also.
And Yoda used to play with Chewbacca when he was just a little Wookieeling.
See?
Rolled him around in the grass a lot.
This is what
so
happened.
They're great friends.
This is why I call it continuity.
But they never bring it up. Other
no, they don't talk about it now.
That's why I call it continuity porn. That was one of the tunnels from Planet of the Apes, by the way. I'm kidding.
Oh,
but it was like in Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, one of those tunnels.
One of those tunnels.
I haven't seen that movie. I don't think. I know you're going to hate me now. I know how you're.
Great window. I like that window.
It's nice spider. Yes. Well, of course, that motif is continued in. Well, actually, it's the motif from the front of the TIE fighters.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's continued. Now you see how the angle of that corridor is.
Yeah.
Remember from that
yeah.
hallway. It's the same architecture essentially.
By the way, this architecture resembles a lot the control room in the place where Anakin goes and kills everybody in episode 3.
Okay.
I just realized that.
Now watching this once again for the first time. You go into this thinking you had the first part. You thought, "Hey, Luke got away, and he had his like little moment of success." And now this stuff starts happening. Mm-hmm. This was traumatic.
Right,
great music cue. Like, oh my gosh, great like, music cue. The brass in that cue. Oh,
and it's just like Luke's getting slaughtered. There's like no way he can defend himself.
And you
he's
didn't
in
even
over his head.
You didn't even know like first watching this that Darth Vader could even do stuff like that.
Exactly. Well, that's the whole thing. And then you like, and Luke is seriously losing. And you just don't see that kind of thing. And if you're scared of heights like me, that does have an effect on you.
Mm-hmm.
But I... Well, that was a great shot.
Sneaky.
It's awful, but it was great. Good old Leia.
Yeah, I mean, she's always good with a gun.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Not as good as the chick in Spaceballs, though.
You shot my hair.
She put that in full auto.
Oh, another one of my favorite films of all time. Not going to lie. Love that movie.
It's pretty brilliant. It's probably one of the better parodies.
Of all
there.
Time, I would yeah. say, too. Yep.
Definitely probably my favorite Mel Brooks.
Really?
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
I would even say so. It's my favorite, too.
Wait,
second Blazing Saddles.
I think mine is Young Frankenstein.
Young Frankenstein? Blazing
Young,
Saddles?
Young yeah. Frankenstein is close behind it, but it's my favorite.
Yeah, it's my favorite, too.
Wow.
Actually, I've never seen Spaceballs.
Oh, my God. I've seen it like
well,
a million times.
You have to
times.
Watch it after this. Just...
I have Spaceballs, the poster.
I want to get Spaceballs, the flamethrower.
When you can't see the movie, you just watch the poster.
But I always wanted the toilet paper. Sad.
You got to watch it.
Merchandising.
Yeah,
you got to watch it. It's great.
I'll let you borrow my copy if you want.
Cool. Rick Moranis is in that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
John
he
Candy.
Plays Dark Helmet.
Joan Rivers.
Yep.
The music cue.
Bill Pullman.
Music cue is great here because this is the love theme cue,
yep.
I think. Yeah, mm-hmm.
It is.
Yep.
Yeah,
that is
Williams is going full tilt with his melody lines.
And this was, of course, great. You know, R2 spreads the smoke and he's going through there. Everyone's going, yeah, go R2.
They're getting a little win. They get a little win right now.
Well, exactly. And that's the whole thing, is balancing out the losses and the wins. I mean, they are getting away. It's a little win. And they're shooting a lot of stormtroopers, which definitely makes us all happy.
Definitely. Always a good time.
Okay. Knight and getting a little bit of a gag in there. Can't get 3PO in. I also love how gritty it all looks. That Falcon just looks so beat up.
So beat up. I wish I really, I don't know. I just had like a comparison of what I would think like the Millennium Falcon would be to like a car on the road right now. You know what I mean?
And this is just great sound music cue, and it goes from that to this.
Right. And now we're like, oh my gosh, you know, what's going to happen to Luke? Now his friends are all gone. He's cornered. Right.
Now, I always tried to figure out the architecture of, like, where did he go from there to get to there? But I'm like, all right, whatever. I just gave up after a while.
You can actually see it in that shot.
Yeah.
When you started talking, then, that broken out window was just right up there.
So then where was the, but then in relation to the carbonite freezing facility, where was it?
Oh,
that's what I was trying to figure out.
I
was trying to figure out.
I couldn't tell you that.
And so now we're back to more fighting. Oh, man. It's just a brutal fight.
I love that where, like, Darth Vader swings at him and misses through the doorway, so it's like the blade is definitely not solid. Like, they just proved it's a lightsaber blade. I mean, it's pretty good.
I mean, this is a really good lightsaber fight. And once again, I'm sorry, I'm going to compare it to the prequels. The prequels are just like, they're just like going bam, 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 bam. I'm like, yeah.
This is great.
Look at the acting. Yeah. Look at the acting Mark Hamill's doing. Mark Hamill, I don't care what anyone wants to trash on him. I mean, he's fantastic.
He got a shot in.
Well, and the style that they fight in this is a little bit more medieval. What I mean? The way they maneuver.
Right. The hand going.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Never saw that coming first time.
No. Never saw it coming.
What happened was the audience realized by this point, you have no safety.
Yeah.
They're going to go as like far
everything
as they're
goes.
Go, and we're just on the, we're not in control of this ride.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
So you're on the edge of your seat.
Mm-hmm. And this is a great shot. And of course, we're going to get the biggest reveal of all time in movie history. Okay, this is fantastic. Okay, this beats Star Wars hands down.
And this, of course, is the famous part where not even the actors knew what they were eventually going to be saying they did it on set.
Didn't Mark Hamill know? Mark Hamill knew, but actually...
No, that's not what I heard. I heard that nobody knew, and that they actually were having a conversation supposedly about who killed your father. And he was saying, Obi-Wan killed your father.
Oh, and that's when he said
no. And then he says, no, it's not true, and all that.
That ruins it for me. Because now I'm like, but I want to... I'm just going to believe that they acted it this way. Because look at that.
Yeah. No, the only person that knew was James Earl Jones.
Well, of course, who did it, the booth. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you hear that tiny little sound?
No.
Creaking of the glove? That's good stuff.
I'm sorry. I'm not going to call bullshit, but I will say, actually, he had to know, because there is one thing where Luke is lying there in the Millennium Falcon, and he says, father, because he's Luke, and then he says, father.
Right. I meant when they were doing this scene. I mean, because they may have shot the thing in the Millennium Falcon dead last.
Okay. All right. Okay. I'll buy it. And this was amazing. I was like, Luke's just like, huh? Darth's like, I didn't see that one coming. Nope.
Mm-hmm. But it's what heroes do. They take a leap of faith, you know, literally.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then he goes into a tube and he's flying up. And it's like, what is this? Just everything was just such a surprise. It was great.
Mm-hmm.
And just when you think he's going to get away and he's hiding his hand that's not really gone.
Right? It's like for the audience,
wait,
every
wait,
time
wait,
you
wait,
think...
Wait, 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 wait. Mark Hamill didn't cut off his own hand for this?
I'm sorry. No. So you had to hide it. Yep.
Wow.
No, I love it that like every time
not
you...
Not method.
Every
not,
time you think
he
you're
not
safe,
dedicated.
There's something else.
Right,
there's
exactly.
Something else.
Yeah.
I mean, even here, he's trying to hold himself up and...
Crescendo.
I just like that they have the two parts of the antenna. So he tries to reach in... So it was just amping it up to the last possible thing. And, of course, it closes on him. And I'm thinking, no, don't get your hand stuck in there. You only have one hand left. And this, I mean, really, as a character, this is just, he's trying to reach out as much as possible. And I like the Dutch tilt to this, too, which just completely confuses your senses. And now he's hanging upside down, like in the cave.
Mm-hmm.
Back to the beginning.
Back to the beginning. And then he says Leia.
See,
it's like, why didn't we see this? Of course Leia's a sister.
Right. But or and maybe other. Because I saw like all three of the movies.
Did you get it
together?
Quickly?
Like I started getting this like right away.
Oh, then Leia was the other?
Yep.
Okay. All right.
Because I had, because I thought that that's what this meant.
Well, we were I mean, in the 3 years, we were guessing it's Leia because he called her. It's Han. It could be his brother. It could be Boba Fett. I think, I don't know whoever. Who else.
They never did anything good with Boba Fett, by the way.
No.
Just dropped the ball.
That's another thing, another problem I know. That's another problem I had with, this is a nice move where they go flip right back.
Yeah, it's
the
great.
Character I felt they underdeveloped the most from potential was the one in Phantom Menace.
Jar Jar?
No, the one who's like really evil
Darth
and
Maul.
Had the big...
Darth
Maul.
The biggest build-up, the most kick-ass character that you're saying...
Yeah.
And done, gone, nothing explored,
and
nothing...
And we hardly saw him say anything, do anything. When he got
when he was
in the fight and he got killed, I didn't care because I had no attachment to the character, and that was very disappointing.
I was extremely pissed off because I'm saying, you're going to kill this guy when you could have taken his character and developed him into something awesome, and you're shortchanging us this
much? He could have run all through all three.
I mean, that's just on... Yeah. One of many on my list of things that just really pissed me off.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And even in, not that I want to get on too much on Jedi, but even in Jedi, we found out pretty early that in the end, I love that he's going up through and he goes up through two or three different doors. Mm-hmm. That was so cool.
Yeah, so cool.
And then even there, it's like he's going three, four levels. And the great thing is all you see him do is drop. We don't have to see him go in. All we hear is he's in. See?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to worry about it. And now we're on, and this is probably the best quote unquote chase scene. And just great sound effects too and everything.
Beat up, man.
Oh man, look at that.
Worked. You got worked.
Yeah, there are a couple times in these latter two films that Mark Hamill looks wrecked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this chase is amazing.
There's some weird opticals that just happened.
That's okay.
Yeah, I saw that.
I forgive it.
Oh, she kisses him again.
I know.
That was very platonic kiss.
That was platonic. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the little touch of the sun coming up from behind the planet.
Mm-hmm.
The angles are just so nice and sparse. You have the stars and just the angles for how they're coming. It's just three TIE fighters and one Millennium Falcon. That's all you need. You know.
Bunch of Jewie.
And now, of course, the joke plays again. Mm-hmm. This is just brilliant writing. It really is.
And they look at each other and then look at it. That's and classic.
Like it's his fault. Yeah.
What does he say? It's not my fault. He says the same thing. That's my fault. And she was like, I'm going to go take care of this.
Because he's a whiz.
I know. And I like how they don't
take electronic whiz.
They don't take any time to tell us this is why we deactivated the hyperdrive.
Mm-hmm.
Just get to it. Now, here comes the moment. Okay, so Darth is looking out the window. So they've had their big fight. He dropped all that, you know, all that exposition on Luke. All the heaviness.
You know what, though? When Luke is saying these things, picture him thinking about... that he thinks he just found out that Obi-Wan killed his father instead of him just dying. And it still works.
Well, he's going to...
it's anger. He wants Obi-Wan to be his father, you know? So I guess, like...
What? No. I mean...
Saying. Like, if that's what he was thinking...
No. The original reveal was that he says, Obi-Wan killed
he
said his father. Not that he was his father.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, that's what he would want. So, like, thinking that, like, the person that he would want to be his father, killing his father. Do you know what I mean? Like, being bad? Because at this point, like, he has put a lot of that kind of paternal, glory on Obi-Wan.
Well, yeah.
That's where he's directed everything.
Right. And so, to have that big of a disappointment
would
be huge. Big enough to get that kind of reaction.
Right. Yeah, big enough to get that kind of reaction, for sure.
I'm sorry. Luke,
Vader still might be reaching out to him to say, come with me, you know. He's still trying to recruit him.
He is, clearly. I mean, that's what Mark Hamill's acting. He's definitely playing. I guess maybe. Maybe. He did say father. But
that's true.
He did say father.
Yeah, that's a tough one.
See?
I may have to go find that documentary that I saw before and see if they explain that part too.
What's this with missing limbs? There's a missing limb thing.
It's a theme with C-3PO.
Well, mm-hmm. but also with Luke, actually. And
when it's easy to miss a limb, you know.
Well,
especially when you're dealing with lightsabers.
Thank you.
When the payoff, everyone went crazy.
Right?
I was taking an Arthurian legend class, actually Norse mythology class, mm-hmm. when I saw this. And one of the things we're studying, actually, there was a Norse myth of one of the gods who got their hand cut off, just like Luke. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I don't remember who it was. Of course, I knew back then.
Darth Vader doesn't kill but that guy because he's going back to his room to cry.
Right, because it's not his fault. He did everything that at Darth's fair. He did what he asked.
Yeah.
You know?
The stars would look so much better if this film were anamorphic.
Mm.
Yes.
Anamorphic.
Enhanced for widescreen TVs.
Please do it, Mr. Lucas.
Pretty pleased with Sugar on Top. I'll stop talking bad about you.
The Blu-rays come out in September.
Original theatrical version.
Right, I hope, but they don't have the original.
They're not going to do the original theatrical version, are they?
No.
I hear this is like, no, we're set for the next one. You know, Lando and...
Right.
And Chewie are going to go.
Yep.
I always wondered, though, why is Lando wearing the same kind of clothes that Han usually wears?
Because that's the only
because now
wardrobe.
He's on there. He's a rebel. Now he's a cowboy.
That's right.
But he doesn't have his shirt unbuttoned at the top.
Well,
I feel like he should have a bow tie.
He's not that
laid
back. He needs a bolo.
Yeah, there you go. Bolo tie. That would be perfect.
Lando bolo.
And this was cool with the hand.
Oh, yeah.
This is really cool.
Fun stuff.
They're going to make him better than he was.
That's
better, stronger, faster.
Just like Darth Vader.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's got the artificial hand. And notice also what hand he puts on Leia. It's the artificial hand, not the real hand. See?
Cue the music score.
It's the artificial hand. It's the evil hand. Mm. I'm just saying.
Yes, but traditionally the right hand is the hand of trust and... strength in the left hand,
and
is
he's lost the hand of trust and strength.
Mm.
He's lost it. He's lost his human hand. What does that mean symbolically?
That's a good one.
That was the whole thing. Yeah. If that was the Milky Way, I'd say that's the center of the galaxy, but it's another galaxy a long time ago. And 3PO, mind you, is basically all buffed up and cleaned up, though his right leg is now
silver.
Silver.
By the way, C-3PO's leg was silver in the very first coming into this movie. Kind of makes you wonder what happened because he was all perfect at the end of the last one.
Right.
Maybe it was on Ord Mantell.
Replacement part. Yeah.
Man, this was a bummer of an ending. It's
right?
Like, what?
You're like,
everyone out loud.
What?
What?
What? Are you kidding me? No.
I have to watch it again just to make sure I saw what I saw.
So you went back the next night. Oh, yeah.
And waited in line.
Right.
For hours.
Waited. And when
hours.
I must have been gone like 3-4 times to see this. And then, of course, when it came out on video, got the video. No, they didn't have videos yet. Okay. So saw this a number of times.
Mm-hmm.
And then waited 3 years for Return of the Jedi.
Wow, yeah, right?
So can you see why
the concluding chapter.
Why I was disappointed?
No.
How do you see?
Heidi agrees with you. You have to say it, though. The people can't see you shaking your head.
No.
Thank you.
All right. Oh, so Paul Hirsch edited this. Oh, so Marshall Lucas was not on this.
Let's change the subject.
Okay, so Marshall Lucas, I'm sorry, only did Star Wars.
Could we step back for just a moment to the lightsaber fighting? I felt like that was fun. Heidi made a good observation. It's much more like broadsword fighting.
Mm-hmm.
It's much more,
yes.
It harkens much more to the sort of Errol Flynn movies, the Robin Hoods, the King Arthur, like all of that traditional. So they clearly had broadsword and fencing was also in there. You especially see the influence of fencing in the third film.
Yeah, it's a little lighter.
Yeah.
But the way that Darth Vader holds the sword, you know, I mean, he does
very
that
very
classic,
sword.
Yeah, like
it's
over
very,
the head.
It's almost claymore.
Yeah, like it's heavy.
Right. And that's the thing I remember also from this.
Yeah.
It from the original idea of Lucas to do with lightsabers is that they were supposed to be a weapon of power. They were something that was not like he wanted the blade to seem like it had weight. because of just to indicate how powerful these weapons were. And I felt like that just wasn't there at all in the prequels.
Yeah, no. Wasn't there they're really light. Mm. It's almost, I mean, well, because they completely move towards more of an Asian type of,
of fighting style.
So could the rationalization be that once the Jedi fell... No, it doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't track because once the Jedi essentially fell, yes?
Eric Tomlinson is just not disappearing.
There you go. He's
a music recording guy.
That the fighting styles changed, or is it just that they said, well, you know, we're going to do the prequels. Let's just do a different fighting style, quicker, blah, 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 blah.
Here's the thing. There is that. There's the popular fighting styles because now American culture has been infused with all these movies where people are using Asian fighting styles.
Okay.
And it's faster and it's fancier and it looks pretty cool, whatever, whatever, right? But another way you could look at it, they actually did make up this whole... Shut up. This whole thing about...
I'm reading all the people who are making this film. I'm sorry. Go on.
Go ahead.
I was just saying they did come up with this idea of different types by number of lightsaber fighting styles to explain why Dooku's is different than Obi-Wan's, is different than Qui-Gon Jinn, and so forth. It's like type 1, type 2, and like it was separated by like... periods of time in the Jedi lore.
Right.
But if you go to this, it's sort of like all bets are off, okay? No one's been teaching lightsaber fighting for years, right?
Right.
So Darth Vader also knows a certain style, but his mechanical parts limit his amount of movement to where he can't do all the jumping, flipping, whatever's. So it kind of necessitates that he does something that's much more limited in movement. But more impactful. Right. But you have to wonder, where did Luke learn, except from Yoda? And we didn't see them doing any lightsaber training.
He learned some from Obi-Wan, Ben, Kenobi.
Right, with the little floaty ball thing, but not very much.
And maybe because Ben is older, maybe he showed him... older. I mean, those moves were easy for him at older as opposed to doing the younger style.
Like he got the basics.
I do think that he did learn some things from Yoda we just never saw.
I could
go with that. But at the same time, knowing how long it takes to learn a fighting style, especially with something as dangerous as a lightsaber where you miss and you accidentally hit your shin, you don't have a shin.
Yeah. But, I mean, at this point in time, like, this is... but, I mean... It's worth the risk of just trying to self-teach yourself if you know, like, a certain amount of positions and you just drill them every single day.
Sure.
Because at this point in time, there are no more teachers. There's nowhere to learn. Right. You're the last. You are the last.
And I kind of wonder if he went and found some kind of old, like, training recordings or something, you know, from somewhere. Or found some other culture where they fight with primitive weapons and learn something from people or something.
Okay.
I don't know.
I mean, it's a good rationalization. I mean, you know, it can work.
Could make something up.
I mean, there is, like, they say there's, what, there are 18 years we know between Sith and A New Hope.
Yes.
Yes.
There were 5 names that I counted in the credits that are worth mentioning.
Yes.
Go for it.
1, John Ratzenberger was in this movie.
Who was in the Cheers? He was like some major.
Huh.
Dorn, I think, was his name.
Major Dorn.
That caught my eye. Harrison Ellenshaw did Matt Work, who is the son of Peter Ellenshaw, who did Mary Poppins.
Oh.
That's right.
Oh, I'll be darned.
Connection.
Gary Playtech did some effects work in this. He did all the cloud effects in Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Nice.
Stuart Freeborn did the makeup stuff in here, but 2 other Freeborns were also involved, like a wife of his and someone else. Freeborn
did 2001. He did the ape makeup on 2001.
Wow. Stuart Freeborn. And Ralph McQuarrie did the conceptual visual stuff. Dennis Muren did the effects stuff that we talked about, went on to major stuff. And there are 2 others, but I forgot.
The actor you were talking about, Duncan, who was in Last Crusade, his name's Julian Glover.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
So,
not related to Danny Glover, is he?
Not related to John.
I mean, they
Glover.
Might have a different mom or something.
No, completely different thing. So I'm copping. This is a better film than Star Wars. I will.
Oh yeah,
I'll go with that.
The first three. This is the best of the first three
for sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and you have to understand how hard that is for me to say. But I think it. That's been a number of years now since I've seen this and I saw Star Wars. Whatever, whenever we did it, I don't know how many months ago. But
if you put it in the context that it's going to be a cliffhanger ending.
Yeah.
And you go, okay, but I was so pissed off at that ending.
Exactly. At the time, it's just
we
like,
had
oh.
3 years. We had 3 years ahead of us.
There's just so much we had.
You screwed us for 3 years.
Is Luke, you know, is Luke going to go bad? Who is the other Those are the big questions. Like, what's going to happen? How are they going to rescue Han? All these questions.
Oh,
I'm looking forward to doing Return of the Jedi with you.
Oh.
Yeah.
You'd better bring me in for that.
But this is, well, I expect the gang to be all here for this.
All right.
This is why I wanted to get Empire out of the way so we could get to Return.
Got to do them in
order. I like Empire.
Should we wait 3 years?
But Return, no.
Return. Just to be sentimental.
Only to have like a fair perspective of Sayers.
Right.
Well,
I know, right.
3 years.
3 years.
We're not allowed to watch it, but we have to see promos.
You're
going to
torture
day.
Me after basically, was it been 28 years since, it's been 28 years since Jedi came out.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
Sorry. I had to point that out. Wow. It's been 28. Huh. So I've been waiting 28 years to mouth off on Jedi. Yes.
And now all can hear your pain.
Also, I think I'll be reiterating some other people's pains. Yes?
Brian Johnson, who did a lot of effects work on this. He did Space
1999. And he was also in the 2001 crew.
Yep.
A lot of those people.
I think he did some work on Aliens. I think he did, too.
And likely Alien, too. That same bunch, because they're all...
I don't know about Alien, but...
All the same people. Yeah. So any
a lot of great names in those credits. That was very entertaining because all those people became famous, very famous for... More projects after
this. Well, and
it's
loaded. Like, you rarely see credits where it's just like a wall of names. Yeah, just so many people had to come together to make this even happen.
Well, and for sure, you didn't very much before the Star Wars movies started coming out.
Right.
Oh, because of the level of
right.
effect.
But Star Wars was the first film to, because usually when you went to a movie, they usually did the credits all at the beginning, and usually it's like keys and maybe some further down. And then that was, if you look, watch Jaws, it's all front loaded with the credits, and at the end, there's just a few credits, and then it's out of there. Star Wars was the first film, really, to do the whole thing of showing everyone, and they showed everyone. And it was like, holy crap, hundreds and hundreds of people worked on this. And afterwards, everyone started doing that.
Yeah.
The event films where you started sticking around for 6 minutes for the credits at the end, 7 minutes, we were like, oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. Never have to sit that long for end credits. Yeah. Superman, I remember the same thing. Superman had really long,
which was the year
78.
Oh, 78, the year after Star Wars. Yeah. So any does this any thoughts about this about Empire? Does it inspire anything? You discover anything new about this? I did, but
what did you?
A whole bunch of stuff.
A whole bunch of stuff.
Go ahead.
It was an interesting time for me to watch this because I've just been I've always been like a big lover of mythology. And recently, my little brother is taking a mythology class in college, and we've been just talking about a lot of myth, you know? Just, we've been watching a lot of films about King Arthur and such, you know, just like a tie-in. And to just be so saturated with those thoughts and to watch this film, I think that this is actually like a very unique experience for me, you know? Like, I saw it all so much more alive in the mythology of Star Wars than I think I have maybe, now I wouldn't say ever, but in quite some time, you know, like really like thinking of all those things together. So interesting.
Neat. Mm. I think I've seen this so many times because it is my favorite one.
Mm-hmm.
I think Return of the Jedi was my favorite until I was probably around 14 or 15 when I started really appreciating the whole struggle of good and evil kind of thing, you know, and I think too, because I was so young when I saw Return, I just had all the good stuff in my mind and hadn't really broken it down into what could have been or what could have been maybe more or less satisfying about it. But once I did, I've probably seen Empire easily twice as much as either of the other two.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'll just put this movie in and watch it when I just feel like, you know, going somewhere else. Right. It's one of my favorite places to go. I don't know if I got anything new out of it, but, It's always very familiar yet very strange, and that's what I love about it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get much of anything new out of this, but it did reaffirm how thoroughly I enjoy the music score. Stands out, the craftsmanship, the writing, the interaction between the characters is so entertaining. How it clicks the most for me out of any of the films. On all the levels.
Yeah.
Except the ending, but then I would say, oh, it's a cliffhanger. Just deal with it.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, watching it this time, I mean, it was interesting because I have not seen it in a long time, and I haven't seen it with people in a very long time. So it was interesting because I did, some of those feelings from when I first saw it were coming back, and what I was experiencing here was kind of a combination of that and watching it now. So I'd have to kind of watch it to just watch it and get a feeling, because I didn't really feel much of anything at the end this time, because I know where it's going. I've been through that journey, which I'm grateful for, because I went through the whole journey of seeing a story for the first time, having all those feelings, and then having them answered however they were answered, but then continuing that journey and then to come back and revisit it. It's interesting because it kind of rekindled and just reminded me about all the things I remembered, and it meant something at that time. And it's interesting, I don't feel all that differently about it. I thought I would feel more, but then again, I did see it at 18. So does that mean I'm still 18? I certainly hope so. but it does, I can appreciate more where the emotions are all taken and all the character stories are taken, as opposed to the first one, even though the first one is actually quite entertaining, is quite groundbreaking for its time. So, and it was a chance to share also, you know, what the experience was like, so I could set up for the heartbreak that was to be Return of the Jedi.
Yes.
So, anyway.
Heartbreak.
Come on, you were there. You're there like I was there.
I wasn't heartbroken.
I don't know if it was a heartbreak.
It was just, you know, it was like the end of this thing. It's just like, what are they doing to us? But it's interesting. They can have so much power. They can have you be like, how could you do this? You have to fulfill the promise. And that's the thing. That's the great thing about these films, is they promise so much. Look what we were expecting for the prequels. We were expecting Nirvana, and what'd we get? And that has a lot to do with it, too. We were expecting so much.
Yeah, too much expectation.
You know what pissed me off about Return of the Jedi?
What's that?
you'll know the names, but I don't know the names. Who's the little creature that sits next to Lando Calrissian in this ship all the time? With the weird eyes.
He's got a name, yeah.
That creature pissed me off. I'm like, this is stupid as hell. And then the other guys with the big eyes, like on tentacle things or something, the other alien creatures that are green or something. Those two designs, I was so, it was like a bad Muppet show. And I just,
there's never a bad Muppet show.
Oh.
Yeah, that's
anyway.
That's a whole different conversation.
Okay, you know what? We will have to do Return of the Jedi very soon. Okay. Mm-hmm. Maybe sometime in the fall.
In the future.
So we'll work it out. We got a lot of things to work out with schedule and everything, but I want to thank you all again for coming by for this Film Grout commentary, especially the second part of the Star Wars series. Who knows? Maybe we'll make it all the way through to Sith. I don't know.
I will be conveniently busy.
Let's just get to Return first. Okay. Anyway, this has been
Duncan K. Fraser.
And Tim McMillan.
And
Heidi Hilliker.
And Serge Delpierre. And this has been Film Grout. See ya.